But after we just heard from Dean Ambrose, Renee, I have got to ask you, what do you know about this?
Look,
you've got to know something.
I don't know what his plan is. I don't know.
Sergeant Schultz, do you have any comment?
I know nothing.
It's business time, baby.
The Solar Monster sounds off.
My client.
Mama Monster.
Conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 574 of the Solar Monster Sounds Off post-Thanksgiving edition. Here for Sunday, November 25th, 2018. I am the Solar Monster. I am in a food coma, as I hope many of you are. Black Friday sales are still going on all over the place. I think Monday is what, Cyber Monday they call it. They're going to have one of these things for every day of the week soon. And in our case, the Pro Wrestling Tee sale is still ongoing, at least for another, probably a little over 24 hours from the moment I'm recording this. This Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, the sale ends. So if you have not already taken advantage, go to prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. You don't even have to input any code. It is a site-wide sale. You can get 20% off all shirts in our Sound Off store. And there's over 30 in there to choose from. It's just another way you can support the show, if you so choose. But you've got until Monday afternoon to log in and get that 20% off discount. Again, no code is needed. And any support, of course, is always appreciated. This week's episode of The Sound Off is sponsored by The Ridge. You guys have heard me talk about them the last few weeks. It is a slim front pocket wallet. It's got RFID blocking technology that protects you from data theft. Believe it or not, they have people who walk around and they have devices on them that you can't see, you can't hear, and people can actually steal your data. You've got credit cards in your pocket. If you've got a wallet that doesn't have this kind of protection, you could be at risk. They come in titanium, aluminum, carbon fiber. They've got over a dozen different styles and colors to choose from. If I had to make a suggestion, one that I think is cool, is the burnt titanium color wallet. That's a good looking wallet with a money clip or a cash strap on the back, whatever your preference may be. And they even ship with a little tiny screwdriver to show you the quality they put into these things. It's not just that they send you a wallet. It's a whole little kit that they send you. And inside is a little tiny screwdriver. Should you ever have the need or want, for whatever reason, to remove any of the screws, you want to remove the cash strap, whatever, it gives you the tools to do so. It is a quality product. I would not be talking about it right now if it wasn't, because I ain't got time for that. And for a limited time, you can get 10% off your first Ridge wallet, get free worldwide shipping on your order. All you got to do is go to ridgewallet.com/solomonster and just make sure you use the promo code solomonster at checkout. Again, that's ridgewallet.com/solomonster. You can get 10% off courtesy of The Sound Off. And when you get your wallet, by the way, and I know some of you have already, you know, cashed in on this and gotten the discount. When you get your wallet, tweet me a photo at solomonster. I love seeing that when people send me photos after they've gotten this stuff. And I like promoting things that people can actually use. You know, I'm 2 months in to using mine, and I love it, and I think you will too. Thank you, everybody who showed your support this week. We are heading into the holiday season, so I know a lot of you have friends and family, and you're going to be buying Christmas gifts soon, and the fact that you would take time out of your day to make any kind of donation or contribution, you know, via PayPal or buy a shirt or whatever the case may be, it does mean a lot to me, because I know this is a kind of a busy time of season, you know, busy time of year for people when it comes to all that stuff. So thank you to the Belgian Brute, Nicholas Overmeer. By the way, if you want to make a donation, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. Right-hand side of the page, you'll see the PayPal button. Or, you know, if it's easier, you can always just use my email address. You can make a donation via PayPal that way, thesolomonster@gmail.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on the show. Again, Nicholas, thank you very much. The Portland Pop Star, Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, We have Eugene Crazy Eyes Morgan, Killshot Keith Hart, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Stephen Handyman Halistic, the Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T, Dastardly Derek Smith, Good Guy Gerald Wood, the five-tool player Adam Bartolo, fellow Mets fan, the British Brainbuster Andre Delabov Darafat, thank you very much, Sweet Sapphire Sarah Kittleston, and Beth Memphis Maniac Small. Thank you all for your support of the podcast. And hey, Warren Anderson, Matthew H1447, Kev HBK, and Dashing Dan Danielson. Thank you for the kind words that you left in iTunes for the show. Dan called it not just a podcast, but a friendship. And it's true. I mean, it may sound corny, but I open up about things on this show sometimes that I don't open up to people to who I've known for years. So, you know, I'm kind of an open book on here when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I have formed some legitimate friendships from doing this show over the years. So thank you for saying that. That means a lot. One of our listeners, Mark, and then we're going to move on here, but I got to show some love for Mark. He has an Etsy store you guys, I think, should know about, especially if you are into Cards Against Humanity. I've played Cards Against Humanity a few times, and it's a certainly an interesting game, depending on who you play with, I guess. But he makes custom cards, custom decks for Cards Against Humanity, for a whole variety of themes. Each deck has 15 white cards and 5 black cards for $20. There's one funny wrestling deck that he's got on there with cards like, you know, to be the man, you have to blank the man, which could open up a whole host of different answers there. These are great for the holidays. You can play against family. You can play against friends. It's a good icebreaker at parties. You can make your own decks. Make your own decks, your own references. Make it more personal if you want. And a percentage of the holiday sales will be going to Los Angeles Fire Relief Charities to help out after the recent fires out west. Just visit Etsy.com/shop/funnydecks. Or you can go to Etsy.com and hit the search box, and all you got to do is type in funny decks, all one word. No space, just funny decks. Before I get into all the wrestling stuff here, I had a note because I've been watching this new show on Netflix. Actually, a couple of people who listen to the podcast told me about this. And were it not for you guys, I might not have watched this. But I had a recommendation here I wanted to pass by you. For those of you who are into the horror or thriller type shows, I just watched The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. And I wanted to recommend it for anybody who's into that kind of TV. It's really good. Very creepy and disturbing. And it is one of these shows that gives you a lot of jump scares. If you're not into that, you might not like it so much. But I just thought overall it was a very good show. And I wanted to recommend that. And also, if that's recommended viewing, then recommended listening is the Jake the Snake Roberts interview that he just did on Joe Rogan's podcast this past week. I guess it would be recommended viewing, too, because the video's up on YouTube. But this is just a fantastic interview. And Jake, I mean, he tells a whole bunch of stories, some I'm sure that, you know, you've heard before. But he tells the Macho Man story when they did the whole snake bite thing in WWE. And Macho backstage insisting that Jake have his King Cobra bite him on the leg first because he didn't believe him. He didn't believe him that the snake was, you know, defanged and devenomized. And he wanted, before he went out there and let that snake gnaw on his arm, he wanted to make sure that everything was on the up and up. And so he said to Jake, well, have that thing bite you on the leg. And so Jake rolled up his pant leg and had the snake bite him. And I'm sure it didn't feel too good. But I love the analogy that he used. When he was talking about his demons and the drugs and the drinking, and you, I mean, if you know his story or you've heard Jake tell these stories before, you know how dark things can get very quickly, and it does. But he's very open and honest about all of that stuff on the podcast, and I just love the analogy that he used when he was talking about all of his stints in rehab over the years. So many times he got sent to rehab for a month or 3 months or 6 months. And it never took. It wasn't until he linked back up with DDP and actually moved in with him and he was there for years that, you know, he said in the interview, I finally realized that, wow, this guy's not going to... It's not like a one-and-done thing where this guy's just going to kick me to the curb when I fail. This guy's not going to let up. And all of a sudden, it's sort of a light bulb went off in the guy's head. But he used this analogy where, you know, I'd go to rehab for a month or two or whatever, and it never worked because the entire time his addiction would wait patiently for him. And he said no matter how well he might be behaving and he could be on the wagon and everything could be going well, it was like his addiction would be waiting patiently, training for his big return when he got out. It would be over in the corner doing push-ups, he said. And I just thought, like, visually, I'm visualizing this, and I'm like, this guy has quite the way with words. Because I just thought it was, the way he was describing it was great. It's easy to understand. If you haven't gone through that before, you can just picture that you've got this disease, this thing within you, that doesn't care if you're going through, you know, rehab and you're doing well. Oh, that's great. There it is, off in the corner, wearing sweats and some Zubaz pants, doing jumping jacks and push-ups, just waiting. Just waiting for the day that you get out. And I've never heard anybody describe it that way before. So anyway, that's just one thing that kind of jumped out at me. There's a lot of funny, like, Andre stories and other things in there. So definitely check that out if you have not already done so. It is a great interview. Tonight on the WWE Network, they are airing a one-hour special called Starrcade. Last night, they had their second annual Starrcade live event in Cincinnati. And they are airing a condensed one-hour version of that show tonight. This is sort of an experiment. They're going to be doing more of this sort of thing on the network in terms of airing, you know, house shows and house show footage. And so the matches that are airing tonight, or the segments that are airing tonight on the network, because it's a one-hour version, obviously it's not the entire show, they are airing the steel cage match from last night between AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. There is a six-woman, or I think actually an eight-woman tag team match. Sasha Banks, Bayley, Ember Moon, and Dana Brooke taking on Nia Jax, Tamina, Alicia Fox, and Mickie James. A live performance with Elias and the Nature Boy Ric Flair. And a Miz TV segment with Shinsuke Nakamura and Rey Mysterio. So that is what is scheduled to air tonight, for those of you who are interested in watching that. There is no street fight. The main event last night was a street fight for the... actually, it might have been a cage match also. I think it was a cage match for the Intercontinental title between Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. As far as I know, that is not airing on the special tonight. I guess they're going to save that for the pay-per-view. So we'll see. I mean, look, I've been an advocate for years that they should be airing select house shows on the network, or they could do live cut-ins, especially if it's like a big house show, like a Starrcade. Or if they're at Madison Square Garden, you know, they're going to be there the day after Christmas, I'll be there. Shows like that, I think, would be kind of cool. Just for them to kind of drop in on. And show more stuff like that on the network. And I think going into the new year, that is what they're planning on doing more of. I am starting a new series on the podcast this week and for the next 10 weeks. What we're doing is we are counting down to the Royal Rumble. Royal Rumble is coming up in January in Phoenix. They're going to be outside at a baseball stadium, Chase Field. It's going to be a big show. And I had the idea many weeks ago. I said, you know, I want to do some kind of a countdown. I've done these before. You know, you guys know some of the other lists I've done talking about top promos and the 15 best WCW matches of all time, tying that into the anniversary of the death of the company. What could we do with the Royal Rumble? And so I have been going back and watching a whole bunch of matches, some of which, you know, I have seen many times over the years, and some of which I haven't seen since they probably originally aired. I had a list in my head for what I wanted to do. I've been doing a lot of homework, a lot of research, going back and watching a lot of these matches. And what we're going to do here, I think it would be very sort of passe to do, ooh, top Royal Rumble, you know, 30-man matches, or top Rumble pay-per-views. Been there, done that. I've talked about that before. This time, what we're doing is I am ranking. I'm counting down in rank order the top 10 greatest championship matches in Royal Rumble pay-per-view history. Starting with number 10 this week. And actually, the first Rumble wasn't even on pay-per-view, but we'll include that as well. But the top 10 greatest title matches in Royal Rumble history. And we're going to start with number 10 this week, We'll do that at the end of the show. And we're going to do one match every single week from now until January 27th, which is the date of the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. And yes, any Rumble matches that happen to be contested for a championship are fair game to be on this list. Now, the last time I did a countdown like this, it got a great response. People seemed to really enjoy it. That was the top 15 countdown of the greatest WCW matches. We counted down 15 weeks until the 15-year anniversary of the death of WCW. And one of my favorite sound-offs was the one where I had DDP on for the first time. I had him on again later on, but the first time I ever had Diamond Dallas Page on my show was as part of that countdown. He was sick as a dog, but he gave me 40 minutes to talk about his match with Goldberg at Halloween Havoc in 98, which was on the list. And he also told a few Randy Savage stories. You can't go wrong with Macho Man stories. So I let him tell those stories. But that was episode 416 in the archives, if you want to go back, for anybody who's interested. Anyway, we're going to start that countdown later in the show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Survivor Series was last Sunday. If you want my full thoughts, the full extra review is up on the YouTube channel. All 47 minutes of it. Overall, I thought it was a thumbs-up show. NXT wins the weekend, but I still thought Survivor Series was a thumbs-up effort overall. You know, we had the Enzo Amore idiocy. Him, basically, he bought a ticket, and he was sitting, I think, in the second row, and he was sitting there in this white hoodie trying to conceal his identity until the tag team match between the AOP, I think it was AOP against Sheamus and Cesaro. And then he, you know, jumped up on his chair or jumped up on the barricade, and he was acting like an idiot. And he got tackled by security and kicked out of the building, and he was banned from the Staples Center. They actually had signs posted the next night for security in the building that had Enzo's face on it and his real name in case he tried to get back in after his little stunt. He was trying to drum up attention for his concert, because remember, Enzo's a rapper now. He's got a rap career. And so he had a concert scheduled for the next night, I think Monday night, on Sunset Boulevard at some kind of venue or club or something on Sunset Boulevard out there in L.A. Apparently, it didn't work, his little stunt, because a whopping 35 people showed up to his concert. I get more people out for my podcast meetups than he did for his concert. But that was the Enzo story coming out of Survivor Series. If he didn't have a burned bridge before, he surely does now. Charlotte and Ronda, great match. Charlotte is really, you know, on another level right now in terms of the female performers. Back-to-back caliber main event matches. You know, the one at Evolution with Becky Lynch, which could have easily closed out that show. And then Survivor Series with Ronda, which was better than it had any right to be, given Ronda's level of experience. And given the fact that this was a match that only was, what, put together on a week's notice? Something like that? And they can have their rematch now, given what happened at the end there with Charlotte beating the crap out of her. They can have their rematch at the Royal Rumble. Not WrestleMania. They could do it at the Rumble. Rumble's going to be a big show in January. They're going to be in a baseball stadium. They're going to have 40 or 50,000 people. In that stadium. It'll be open-air stadium, I think, right? It's going to feel like it's going to have that WrestleMania feel to it. Perfect place to do the Charlotte-Ronda Rousey rematch at the Royal Rumble. Yes, they're on separate brands, but and as we're constantly being reminded, Survivor Series is the one time of year that Raw does battle with SmackDown. Of course, we all know that's bullshit. And I still think they should do the match at the Royal Rumble. WrestleMania should still be Ronda Rousey one-on-one with Becky Lynch. That is the match. It should not be a triple threat. It should not be a fatal four-way. It should be Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch. Whatever happened last weekend should have no bearing on that match taking place at WrestleMania. Keep your eye on the ball. Now, unfortunately, as we saw from SmackDown on Tuesday, the Raw versus SmackDown stuff, surprise, surprise, meant absolutely nothing. It was a clean sweep, if you believe WWE and ignore the pre-show, pretend it never happened, which is what they've done. A clean sweep for Monday Night Raw versus SmackDown at the Survivor Series. 6-0. That's what they said. Clean sweep for Raw. And so we get to SmackDown on Tuesday, and there's nary any acknowledgement of it whatsoever. And every year it ends up meaning absolutely nothing. And it was no different when you had those bragging rights pay-per-views, and they had some big match with the big cup. Remember the bragging rights cup, the big trophy they had? Like it was some kind of a big deal. And then, like, the next night or the next week, it was like you were in another dimension. It wasn't even discussed. It wasn't talked about. Eventually, they just did away with the pay-per-view because they realized it wasn't doing well, and it meant less than nothing. Raw versus SmackDown could very well mean something, but every year they don't care. It's just, we gotta get through this. It's November. Roman Reigns got hurt. Supposedly they weren't even going to do Raw versus SmackDown this year, but when he, you know, announced that he was going to relinquish the championship and leave due to illness, it changed everything. It's what they do in November. It's like, you know, when Hell in a Cell comes around, it's time for Hell in a Cell. This is what they do. It's a gimmick. And they just got to get through it, and let's get beyond it, and we can move on. That's the mentality here. But I thought it was completely ridiculous. Getting to SmackDown on Tuesday, this guys got swept. They were embarrassed. They were humbled at Survivor Series. Not a mention. I mean, the commentators may have briefly mentioned it, but if you paid attention to Paige, who's the general manager of the show, you pay attention to Shane McMahon, who wrestled in that match at the pay-per-view. He's the commissioner of SmackDown. Not a mention whatsoever. Nothing. Nada. It's like it never even happened. They certainly didn't seem bothered by it. It was just, we have to show, as always, that SmackDown is, and will forever be, Raw's bitch. Fox deal be damned. That's all that was. That's all that was. And I'm going to get to Raw. I'm going to get to SmackDown. This was not a good week for WWE television. Once you got past the weekend was good. Once you got past that, it was all downhill from there. And boy, do I have something to say about Raw. I'm just letting you know right now. But before we get to that, there's bigger fish to fry, bigger news here to get to. There was a story this week on the website wrestlingnews.co. Had a report this week on the filing of several Elite-related trademarks. Of course, the Elite group, you think of Cody, think of the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, they are the Elite. And so they had this report about these trademarks being filed earlier in the month, which gives credence to the news that SE Scoops broke last month about the formation of a new wrestling company. Now, if you remember, SEScoops.com broke the story back on October 19th that the groundwork was being laid for the formation of a new wrestling promotion involving some of the top players in the industry. It had backing from a billionaire sports family, the Khan family, which owns, or the father anyway, owns the Jacksonville Jaguars of the NFL. I think there might be a soccer team that he owns as well. Jim Ross and Chris Jericho at the time were rumored to be involved. Since then, they've given what I would call soft denials of that news, of that report after it leaked. I don't know that they're too deeply involved beyond them sort of being on board, trying to help recruit people, recruit wrestlers, and give advice and that sort of thing. But there is definitely smoke to the fire. There is some kind of involvement with Jericho and Jim Ross. I do believe that to be true. I'm not saying that they're signed, sealed, and delivered, and Jim Ross is going to be an announcer, or he's going to be the head of talent relations, and Jericho is going to be their headliner. I'm not saying that. But clearly, there is some kind of involvement here with them. Where there is smoke, there is fire. And the trademarks that were filed, basically, it's All Elite Wrestling LLC filed a number of trademarks back on the 5th of November that include the names Double or Nothing, Tuesday Night Dynamite, and All Out. All Out sounding like it could be the follow-up to All In. Makes sense. We know Cody is leaving Ring of Honor after his match with Jay Lethal. He's challenging Lethal for the Ring of Honor world title at Final Battle. It is full steam ahead. He's hurt. I know he's got, or he might have just had meniscus surgery, but he has vowed to be at Final Battle no matter what. Maybe he hasn't had the surgery yet, but he's going to, I think, after Wrestle Kingdom. So he's working hurt, but he has promised he'll be there, and I believe that's it for him. And he has vowed that he's going to win the Ring of Honor Championship, and he's going to take it with him as a free agent. He's going to pull a CM Punk, what Punk was claiming he would do with the WWE title back in 2011. Only this time, it doesn't look like Cody is sticking around the way that CM Punk did. The Young Bucks, I believe they may already be free agents. If not, they will be come January. Kenny Omega, he will be a free agent as of January 31st, unless he signs somewhere before then or he renews some kind of deal with New Japan. Supposedly, he likes it in Japan. He would like to stay with New Japan. Doesn't mean he will. Certainly, if he was going to come to WWE, he would not be allowed to continue working with New Japan, so that could factor into his decision. But he'll be a free agent very soon, unless he makes a deal before then. And I could absolutely see Kenny Omega being a part of something like this. I do think there is a void right now in WWE that he could fill. You know, with Roman Reigns being gone, we don't know for how long. There is absolutely a void, an opportunity there for him to step into a top role, a pretty prominent role, kind of the way that AJ Styles did when he came in a few years ago. So the timing for him, I think, might be right. But I don't trust that they see him as somebody who could fill that role. They may look at him and think that he's some kind of comedy guy. And again, it's hard because for every AJ Styles who was signed and was used as a top player, you can find three or four or five guys who were not used to their full potential. And I would hate for Kenny Omega to be one of those guys, which is why I'd rather he not go there. I'd rather see him keep his independence, sign with something like this, keep a side gig at least with New Japan, and for at least another year, keep doing his thing. Hangman Page, he's another one. Adam Hangman Page, he's going to be a free agent. He's been considering, supposedly he was offered something by WWE and he was considering it. I don't know if that's been rejected, if there was a formal offer made already, I don't know. But he's going to be a free agent. The only one who will not be is Marty Scurll. Marty Scurll is locked up, I think, through much of 2019. So he's not going anywhere. You know, I mentioned Jim Ross. Jim Ross is wrapping up his work with Access Television for New Japan. Him and Josh Barnett will be no more in the new year. They're done. And the deal that JR has with WWE is said to be expiring in April, and it doesn't look like that's going to be renewed either. Jericho? Jericho's not under any kind of contract. He's made that very clear. He is not under any kind of written contract with WWE. He has not been for a very long time. When they wanted him, they would call him in to do an appearance or the Greatest Royal Rumble or whatever, but he is not under any kind of actual contract, so he can pretty much do whatever he wants. Now, the WrestleTalk website had a report this weekend claiming that at least two WWE main roster stars have been approached about signing with this new group, informally, of course, because that would be considered contract tampering. And they have either expressed an interest in signing with the new group, or they have flat out told these people, when our deals are up in the next few months, we're coming in. Whoever these people are, they are said to be gone from WWE by April at the latest. Question is, who are these supposed people? Because none of this is confirmed, of course. Let me just mention that. Even the stuff about the promotion, even though the trademarks have been filed, there's been no formal announcement of anything. So all of this is just rumor and speculation and amateur investigative work until we get some kind of formal announcement here. But clearly there's something going on. Who these two supposed WWE stars who may jump ship might be, I'll be honest, the first two names I thought of were Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. We know they have a friendship and a relationship with these elite guys. We know that. They have not done anything in WWE recently. They've done nothing. They're on the back, like so many guys in that company, they are on the back burner. And I think that if they were offered good money, and the schedule and everything was right. Karl Anderson has like four kids now. But if the money was right, I think they would do it. I mean, why not? Unless the money is just that good in WWE, it sounds like they'd probably get a hell of a deal. They'd get to work with their buddies. I'm sure they would be used in a more prominent way. Why wouldn't they take that kind of deal? It would be stupid for them not to. If you know that you've got job security here, you've got billionaire backing, why not? Why wouldn't you? I mean, I would really love to see something like this succeed. I really would. I mean, I have heard so many stories. I've talked about them on the show over the last 11 years. How many times have we heard there's a new wrestling promotion? There's a new wrestling project. This project is being crowdfunded. Wrestling Revolution Project. All these different things that we've heard about over the years. And invariably, they end up going absolutely nowhere. We've been burned by so many of these stories, it's ridiculous. They're going to compete with WWE. No, you're not. You've already failed. If you're starting up a new promotion and that's your mentality, that's your goal, that's your whole purpose and reason for starting up a new company, you will fail. You cannot start up an operation, a freaking startup, I don't care how much money you've got behind you, and say, we're going to compete with Vince McMahon and WWE. We're going to beat WWE. You've already lost. You can't have that mentality. You've got to build something before you can worry about competing with a company like WWE. I would really love to see something like this succeed. As difficult as it is to sit through those 5 hours of weekly television that WWE gives us every single week on Mondays and Tuesdays, believe me, I would love for something like this to break through. And I know a lot of you have long abandoned ship, you know, and just rely on podcasts like this one to keep up with what's going on. I want so badly for somebody to come along and give these people a kick in the ass like WCW did 20 years ago. But like I said last month when SE Scoops first broke this story, if this, you know, they're looking into possible TV deals and whatnot. If this ends up on a major television network, or even something like a Netflix, like a major streaming platform like that, that could be a total game changer. With the money that this group apparently has behind it, if they're willing to absorb millions of dollars in losses, kind of the way that, you know, the Carter family did with TNA in the early days, if they've got the backing and they understand that this is going to be a long-term thing, we're going to lose a lot of money at first, but we've got really great television, or we've got, you know, whatever, a relationship with a streaming platform like a Netflix, that could be a legitimate game changer. But it has to be a major network or a major streaming platform. If it ends up on one of these TV channels that nobody's ever heard of before, I don't care what their roster looks like, it'll end up as a fancier version of Impact with a bigger budget. One person who I don't think will be signing on for this is AJ Styles. Now, Fightful.com had an exclusive report this week about AJ Styles negotiating a new deal, a potential new deal, with WWE. He's got certain requests and certain concessions that he's looking to be met before he signs, but they are talking, they are in negotiations. His deal is up in April. He and WWE are said to be discussing a new 3-year contract. He is looking for a reduced schedule, very much like Randy Orton, what Orton has, where he does TVs, he does very limited live event dates. And the report even says that he obviously felt burned out enough that one of the things that Styles himself pushed for was to lose the WWE Championship. Like he's Bruno Sammartino in the 70s. He was burned out enough that he wanted to drop the title after a year as champion. And obviously he did. He dropped it to Daniel Bryan a few weeks ago. And apparently that was as much to do with AJ himself as anything else. Now, if AJ wants to spend more time with his family, he's got a whole bunch of kids. I don't know how, given all the low blows and nut shots he's taken, but somehow this guy has 4 children. He's not going back to Japan for weeks on end. If that's truly what is most important to him, he's obviously not going to uproot his family and move to Japan. I don't see him going back and doing these long extended tours with New Japan. WWE will give this guy what he wants to keep him. I'm sure he is a priority, if not priority number one right now for that company. They will do everything in their power to make sure that he stays put, and they will damn sure do everything in their power to make sure that he doesn't go to this All Elite Wrestling, whatever that turns out to be. Believe me, They're well aware of what's going on out there in the market. They're well aware of all these different promotions that are sprouting up and trying to compete for talent with them. That's why they're snatching up all these people. Why do you think they're signing so many talents right now? They're not doing it because they have a genuine interest and big plans for each one of these people. They're trying to snatch up as many people as they can to make sure that they don't go somewhere else. You think they're going to let somebody like AJ Styles slip between their fingers? He's not going anywhere. And he has had an incredible run when you consider that this guy spent 11 years in TNA. There was a period of time where WWE would not even look at you. They would not even consider you if you came from TNA. He was almost 40 when he finally made it to WWE. He was not, you know, a quote-unquote WWE guy. He had so many things working against him when he first came in. And he came in with a big splash in that Royal Rumble match. It's about 3 years ago now. He got back-to-back pay-per-view main event title matches with Roman Reigns. Big program with John Cena, where he beat John Cena clean, as a heel no less. He beat him clean at SummerSlam. One of the best matches, I think, in the history of SummerSlam. And he had not one but two runs with the WWE Championship, including that year-long reign that just ended a few weeks ago. And they have basically built this SmackDown brand around this guy. The way that Batista at one time was the face of SmackDown, or Edge. You know, you sort of associate certain faces with different, you know, eras and periods of Raw and periods of SmackDown. And AJ Styles has been that guy on the SmackDown brand for the last, you know, at least the last 2 years. We could quibble about certain booking decisions that they've made. We could quibble about the quality, frankly, of some of the matches that he's had with guys like Nakamura and Kevin Owens. But you can't deny that on the whole, this WWE run for AJ Styles has, if anything, far exceeded expectations based on this company's track record with people like this. It has far exceeded expectations as far as how he's been used. And I think they realize the value he brings and the popularity that he has. I don't know, you know, merch-wise, what he sells. I mean, whatever. I'm sure he does well enough. He was just on the cover of their video game this year. That's a big deal for them. Believe me, they are going to do everything in their power to make sure that this guy is kept happy and doesn't feel the need to have to leave and go somewhere else. So I don't see there being a whole lot of drama with this story as it plays out. Monday Night Raw was at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. This is one of those pay-per-view weekends where they spent three or four straight nights in the same building. They've done this before at Barclays Center here in Brooklyn over SummerSlam weekend. So it was a big LA weekend for WWE. And the first half of that LA weekend turned out to be pretty good. You got the NXT War Games show, which was excellent. You had Survivor Series, which on the whole I thought was a thumbs-up effort. And then we got to Monday Night Raw. It was another week. It was another waste of 3 hours that I can never get back. Each Raw feels like it is in a competition with the episode from the week before for worst show of the year. And that's what, and it was really frustrating, given that they were coming off some pretty good shows, that they would give us this heaping pile of garbage that they gave us on Monday night. And I don't want to hear from people, well, Solomonster, it's the fall season. It's always like this time of year. September, October, November, it's the slow time of year for WWE. They're coasting until they get to the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania season and things are going to pick up. Then how do you account for all of those other months of shitty television? We're not just talking about October and November here. It's been a lot longer than that. They coast year-round. Shane McMahon was not the first McMahon to go coast to coast. Vince McMahon has been doing it for years. First of all, whoever scripted that Stephanie McMahon line in the opening segment on Monday night about the line about dismemberment has got some fucking balls. Let me tell you. Braun Strowman comes out. He comes out to confront Baron Corbin. He tells him that he's going to get these hands like he's a masseuse or something. Stephanie makes the match for TLC. It's going to be a tables, ladders, and chairs match. If Baron Corbin wins, he becomes the permanent general manager of Monday Night Raw. God help us all. If Braun wins, he gets his Universal Championship match with Brock Lesnar. at the Royal Rumble, and Corbin is fired as the acting GM. And Braun goes ahead and he tells Corbin, I'm going to rearrange your face or, you know, some other parts of his anatomy. And Stephanie makes a crack about how, as it turns out, dismemberment is a bit of a corporate liability. Ho, 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 ho. This, of course, after all the heat that this company took for running that show in Saudi Arabia after the journalist was dismembered. Believe me, it's not a coincidence. That was a cute line that they thought would be really funny to include here in this segment that only maybe half the audience, if that, would even get. And that's not the only tasteless thing that they had on this show either. The only thing that needs to be dismembered is this writing team. So now, they go ahead and they do a 30-minute poor man's version after this of the Survivor Series match that we already saw the night before. So nice we had to see it twice. Braun Strowman, Finn Balor, and Elias. Elimination style against Baron Corbin, Bobby Lashley, and Drew McIntyre. And after 30 minutes, what was the finish of the match, you say? There was no finish. There was no finish. Who needs a finish? Why don't they just go an hour and then just end the match? Why don't they do that? The heels just ganged up on Braun Strowman. They smashed his elbow with the steel ring steps. They did this because Strowman has a legitimate elbow injury. I'm sure many of you have heard by now. In fact, he is headed to Birmingham tomorrow for surgery to take care of some bone spurs that have been nagging him, I guess, for a while. And until they open him up, they're not going to know how bad the damage is, which means they don't know for sure if he's going to be ready in time for the match with Corbin at TLC. Worst case scenario, well, I guess it wouldn't be the worst case scenario, but one of the, I guess, contingency plans is that he can beat Corbin very quickly, take no bumps, beat him in like 10 seconds, and then heal up in time to wrestle Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble. Another option that I saw someone mentioned on my timeline, they pointed out that Bray Wyatt made his grand return last night at the Starrcade House Show, and he beat Baron Corbin. He rolled up Baron Corbin. Supposedly Bray's going to be back on television tomorrow night. It's at least possible that he could end up being a replacement for Braun at the pay-per-view, so that's an option as well. I'm not sure how they get from point A to point B like that. I guess there is a history between Bray and Braun, and maybe they can play off that somehow. So we'll see. But it is far from a guarantee that Strowman will be able to wrestle at the pay-per-view in, 2 weeks away now? 3 weeks? December 16th is the TLC show. And I look at this now, the way they've set things up here. And he's going to go to the Royal Rumble. I don't think there's any doubt that Braun Strowman will challenge Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble for the championship. He will lose again. Brock Lesnar will once again beat Braun Strowman, because that's what he does. That is what we have been conditioned to think when it comes to Brock Lesnar against Braun Strowman, that this guy is a loser who cannot win the big one. He's going to fight Brock Lesnar at Chase Field, and he's going to lose yet again. And I have absolutely no interest in seeing this match anymore. There was a time where, to me, it was kind of a neat attraction, big guy versus big guy. They had that match. It was like over a year ago now at the September pay-per-view. And it sucked. It wasn't very good. Since then, they've wrestled at least once or twice more. We know, obviously, Crown Jewel. Even before that, Royal Rumble last year, I think. Wasn't it a triple threat? I thought it was Brock, Braun, and Kane. And that wasn't very good either. But every single time, even when he had Money in the Bank and he cashed in against Roman Reigns and there was interference and he failed in his Money in the Bank cash in, Braun Strowman, for all his bravado and all the things he does, and he tormented Kevin Owens for months on end and he pushes things over and he destroys sets, for all of that, for as big of a man as he is proven to be very small, because he loses over and over and over again when it matters the most. And so here we are now, well over a year after their very first singles match together. They've had multiple matches together, and this guy just can't get the job done. I have no interest in seeing this match now. I say go ahead and get it over with at the Rumble, and then just move on. and get Brock a new opponent for WrestleMania. And what happens with Braun at that point, I don't know. I don't know, and frankly, I don't really care. That's how I feel now. That's what they've accomplished with me. Maybe you're excited about the match. I hope you are. I hope everybody is excited to see Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman again. I am not. Now, speaking of injuries, Strowman's former mixed match challenge partner, Alexa Bliss, who's been out for a while now, she suffered a few concussions recently. So she's been doing the managerial thing. She was doing commentary I saw the other night on TV. She could be in the running for the next Raw general manager if Corbin is in fact fired from that position after the TLC pay-per-view. And if that were to happen, I believe that would be the very first time that we would have two shows simultaneously, Raw and SmackDown, at the same time, under the leadership of two female general managers. I don't remember if Vicky Guerrero was the SmackDown GM or co-GM at the same time that AJ Lee was the Raw GM. AJ, I remember, had that very brief run on Raw as general manager. It is possible there was some overlap there, so maybe this isn't the first time. I thought it was. And it may well be. So that's just an interesting little side fact there, if this were to happen. And you know, again, this is a report that was picked up by the Fox Sports website, originally credited to PW Insider, that Alexa, it's been talked about behind the scenes that she could very well end up in that role. Now, she's been all over social media saying, no, don't believe these reports that I'm going to retire. I'm not going to retire. I'm going to be back in the ring soon. I hope for her sake that's the case, but we just don't know when that's going to be. So I think that there probably is some legitimacy to at least considering her for the role. And, you know, for all of the criticism about Alexa Bliss and her wrestling ability and her matches really aren't all that great, the one thing she could do better than most on that show, she can talk. She's a great character. She's a great personality. She can talk. And so I think this could be a really good role for her until she is ready to come back. If she is going to be out for a while longer, why not? I'd take Alexa Bliss as the Raw GM over Baron Corbin any day of the week. We had Ronda Rousey back on TV. And you might think that's a little bit weird if you saw Survivor Series, because Ronda took a hell of a beating at the end of her match from Charlotte. She was absolutely abused with that kendo stick. She was hit, I think, with chairs. Charlotte even went ahead and basically pilmanized her by the throat. She wrapped a chair around her neck. She stomped on it. Ronda was bleeding. And you would think, boy, this is a vicious assault here. We may not see Ronda on television this week. At least keep her off television 1 week to sell the beating, and then she could come back the following week to start hyping her match with Nia Jax for TLC. Nope. There she was, back on television and smiling the very next night. Now, shouldn't be surprising, because she wasn't even really helped out, or barely helped out at the pay-per-view. She got up on her own power, and she walked out, and so, of course, she was there, back as if nothing had happened the very next night. But it's almost as though this company, they were so petrified by the reaction, the negative reaction that she got at the end of that pay-per-view on Sunday. They just could not help themselves, and they felt, we have to get her back out on TV as soon as possible to fix this, before this kind of spirals out of control. Let's put her on TV, let's give her a big win over Mickie James, and let's get Ronda back on track. They panicked. That's what it felt like to me. There's no reason that she should have been on that show Monday night. It's like they do these big injury angles and assaults, and they don't mean anything. People used to be out for far less. I'm not saying we should just go back to the way things were, keep her out for 6 weeks. I'm just saying, you know, at least pretend that the assault, for all your yapping about how vicious it was, show me how vicious it was. I didn't get that vibe on Monday night when she walked out there with a smile on her face. We got more pee jokes. The Raw train rolls on here. We go from one shitstorm to the next. We got more pee-pee jokes on this show at Drake Maverick's expense after he peed himself the night before at Survivor Series, when he thought that the Big Show was about to beat him up during the tag team match. Now, I saw a note in the Observer this week that the device that they rigged him up with, you know, to make it look like he urinated on himself, allegedly didn't work, or it malfunctioned, something happened. And he may have, there was a belief by some backstage, that he actually may have had to pee his pants for real at the pay-per-view to sort of save the spot and make it work. Imagine coming to WWE, the biggest promotion in the world. It's been your dream job for years. All your life you've dreamt about coming to work for WWE. You used to be a little kid and you would watch Hulk Hogan and The Ultimate Warrior and Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock, and you had dreams to be that person one day. And now you're finally here and you have to piss yourself on live television. I don't even mind them doing comedy. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing they're doing comedy with Drake Maverick, because that's what he was doing at Impact. And I thought he was very entertaining in Impact in that role. The stuff with him in EC3, you know, when he was Dixie Carter's chief of staff or whatever his title was. Rockstar Spud was a comedy character. That is what he is good at. I have no issue with them doing funny stuff with him. I would have rather they waited, frankly, to call up EC3 and put him back together with Drake Maverick. Whether he's a manager for him or whatever, you know, I would rather they hook the two of them back up because they were a very entertaining combo. They still could do that, by the way. So making fun of him is fine. That's not the issue here. But the whole piss thing is just a Vince McMahon specialty. He loves bathroom humor, farting and shitting and pissing and vomiting. Oh, he loves it. How many times have we seen that on his show over the years? Remember when Booker T threw up on Michael Cole? He loves that kind of humor because he's fucking 5 years old, going on 75. And what makes it worse, and here's the other issue I have with this, what makes it worse is that they put this guy with the Authors of Pain. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and say to you that the Authors of Pain were an exciting act in NXT. They were my favorite act in NXT. They weren't. They weren't. But they were booked as killers. And it worked. They were like silent killers. They had a mouthpiece. They rarely, if ever, spoke themselves. They went out there and they fucking destroyed people. And you know what? It worked. They were sort of the resident road warriors on that show. I wouldn't compare them and put them at the Road Warriors level, but they were sort of, you know, especially with Paul Ellering, literally Paul Ellering being their manager, obviously it gives you, it sort of harkens back to the days when you had a dominant team like LOD. And that was the role they played in NXT and it worked. And now you look at these two guys and they're a joke. They're a joke. Rude and Gable got a fluke win on this show over AOPP. Oh, yes. The crowd started an AOPP chant, which Michael Cole was sure to point out. Now Rude and Gable are getting a tag team championship match on Raw tomorrow night. Maybe they can have a pissing contest. A literal pissing contest. The Lucha House Party beat the Revival. Oh, this train rolls on. The Lucha House Party beat the Revival. 3-on-2. Good guys had the man advantage over the heels. Great job. They had a pinata out there. This reminded me of 2000's WCW. Pinata on a pole. Viagra on a pole. That wonderful period with you-know-who writing television. And so the Lucha House Party is out here and they've got the pinata and, you know, it was a short match. Revival lost. They got pinned. Pinned by a pinata. And I said on Twitter, you know, it's ironic that this show has a dead team called The Revival. Electric shock paddles could not bring these two guys back to life. And it is depressing as shit to think about AOP, AOPP, and The Revival in NXT, and look at them now. Look at these four guys now. The problem is, Vince McMahon knows nothing of these guys before they get called up. We know, because we have a chance to watch them, those of us who watch NXT and the TakeOver specials, we know about them. Triple H knows. Pepperidge fucking Farm knows. But Triple H knows those characters better than anybody. Vince McMahon, by Triple H's own admission, he doesn't watch NXT. Not week to week. He's not familiar with these characters. He doesn't pay attention to it. He's not invested in those characters the same way that his son-in-law is. But when there's a hole that they need to fill, somebody goes down due to injury, or they're going to do some kind of a roster shakeup, he calls up these guys, and he has absolutely no idea what to do with them. Bobby Roode was this smarmy, elitist heel in NXT. Oh, I know. Let's call him up and make him a babyface. And because his theme song has the word glorious in it, we'll make his gimmick where all this guy does when he comes out is he'll flail his arms around like Val Venus, and he'll say the word glorious over and over and over and over and over again, like Rain Man, like a fucking pull-string doll. And that will be his gimmick. That will be his one-dimensional gimmick. Look at the Authors of Pain. Oh, let's bring these guys up. And I know, on their very first night on television, we'll split them apart from their manager. Remember all those stories about, well, maybe Paul Ellering didn't want to travel, he's getting older, and so it maybe isn't WWE's fault. Paul Ellering came out, he heard these reports, he came out and said, that's bullshit, I love traveling. No, they just said, I don't know if it's because he's old, I don't know, but they said on night number one, let's split these guys apart from their mouthpiece. We'll take that away from them. And instead, we'll stick our British cruiserweight general manager. We'll put him with them. Because why the hell not? He's half their size, but these guys will be subservient to him. They'll listen to him. They'll take orders from him. For reasons that still haven't been explained. Then we'll shorten their name to just AOP. And now we can make AOPP jokes on television. It's like when Alberto Del Rio came back a few years ago, that one time he beat John Cena his first night back on that pay-per-view. He won the United States Championship. He came to the ring. He came back that night with Zeb Coulter as his new manager. And all of us kind of looked at each other and said, why the hell would Alberto Del Rio come back with Zeb Coulter as his manager? Because it's something you wouldn't expect. And even Zeb Coulter, he's done shoot interviews, and he said, I have no idea why they put me together with Del Rio. I knew it was going to fail. I don't know why they did what they did. It was never explained to me. Well, if it's not being explained to them, then we should basically just give up any hope of them explaining bullshit like this to us. Even the people involved in these things don't know why these decisions are made. So it failed, and they split them apart shortly thereafter. If this guy is so big on giving people something they least expect, try giving us a good Monday Night Raw every now and then. That would really be unexpected. Now, this seems like a good time to mention this. WWE sent out a fan council survey this past week. And I get these from time to time. I'm on the mailing list. And they want feedback from the fans. And this was a very interesting survey. Because this survey was asking about a lot of common criticisms that the fans online, have about the product. And they were asking questions, for example, like, do you think the shows are too long? Do you think that there are certain talents who are being overlooked? Do you think, you know, what do you think about the current roster of champions that we have? Are they deserving of being champion? Are they deserving of being in that spot? What do you think about interviews? You know, they didn't use this exact terminology, but basically, are people scripted too much? Should they have the ability to kind of speak more off the cuff? What do you think about the different personalities on the show? Are they compelling enough for you? Are the shows too long? Sound familiar? These are common criticisms of the WWE show for a long time, and they wanted, in this survey, to know if this is something that is a problem or not. Now, I look at this and I think to myself, are they really interested? Do they really want the truth? Do they really want to know if these are things that bother the fans? Or are they just looking to confirm what they may already believe in their mind, which is that these criticisms are coming from a very, very small subset of fans. And if they get enough feedback to this survey, and the survey shows that, by and large, people are happy with the WWE product, and maybe, you know, it's a 60-40 or a 70-30 split in favor of, no, we love the way things are, we don't want you to shorten the shows, and we don't want you to change this, and we like who the champions are, that it may just be a kind of a confirmation bias type thing where they're just looking to confirm that, in fact, it is a very, very, very small yet vocal minority of the fans who feel this way. If the survey shows them that it's more than just a vocal minority of fans, then there may well be a few things that they are willing to change. But for example, the length of the shows. Monday Night Raw, 3 hours every week? You think that answering a fan council survey is going to change that? Of course not. The shows are going to continue to be long. They're going to have 2-hour pre-shows. That's not going to change. So I would like to think that there is, on some level, some desire for them to change some of these things, but I have absolutely no reason to believe that they will, because there's no incentive for them to. If they're still making money, then why would they change? So I think this is more window dressing and them looking to confirm what they think and hope is the case, which is that it's just a very vocal minority. And look, we reached out, we got fan feedback, and our fan feedback showed exactly what we thought, that we're doing everything just great. That's what I think this is. I would not look at this survey and think that things are going to change very much, because it's all up to one guy. You got to understand something. The way that things are running this company, it's Vince McMahon's company. He owns it. He operates it. He's there every week. He's on headset. He micromanages. It is his baby. It is his product. He's 70-something years old. He's not suddenly going to change and say, hey, I know, why don't we just let people kind of go more off the cuff with their promos, and we'll shorten, you know, the pay-per-views from now on. They won't be as long. We're going to change all of these different things because we sent out a fan council survey. They send out fan council surveys about WWE Network shows, asking for feedback. Is this the sort of thing you would watch? And then a few weeks later, we find out that, you know, one or two of those shows are coming to the network. Well, they already filmed it. Obviously, it was coming to the network anyway. You know, it's like these things are already preordained. Yeah, they're asking for fan feedback. But the proof is in the pudding. Let's see what happens going forward as far as, like, actions speak louder than words, right? The old expression. We'll see. Actions speak louder than words here. I don't see this as being anything more than window dressing. I would not get too excited about this. We had Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins at the end of Raw Monday night. This was actually a show-long storyline where Rollins was looking for Ambrose. Ambrose was in the back, come find me, and Seth couldn't find him. And finally, at the end, you know, obviously they found each other and, you know, beat each other up for a while, and Ambrose left him laying at the end. There was a very controversial line in this one of the promos anyway, that Ambrose cut on this show, where he mentioned Roman Reigns. And he mentioned that Roman, you know, something like, Seth's going to have to answer to me, but Roman's going to have to answer to God. Basically, you know, him having cancer is his fault, and now he's got to answer to God, and whatever happens is going to happen. What a very nice thing to script in there. Now, in the Observer this week, there was a note mentioning that Seth Rollins is now scheduled to be Brock Lesnar's opponent as of today. That, of course, could change. But he is scheduled to be Brock Lesnar's opponent at WrestleMania. Now, it's interesting to note that in what I saw in the newsletter, because this was reported everywhere, but nowhere in what Meltzer wrote did he say that it was scheduled to be for the Universal Championship. You have to assume it would be, because I don't see Braun Strowman taking that title from Brock at the Royal Rumble. And that may well be the only match that Brock has between now and WrestleMania. So you would assume it's going to be a championship match, but that was not specifically stated. And not only is Seth Rollins scheduled to face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, but the belief is that the match will, in some way, shape, or form, will play off of Roman Reigns. So Roman Reigns and his leukemia will be part of the storyline heading into WrestleMania. First of all, let me say this. It was good to see Roman Reigns on the sideline this week. He was sidelined at the Georgia Tech game. He played for Georgia Tech during his college years. He looked good. You know, he looked to be in good spirits. He was laughing and yucking it up. And hopefully things are going well so far with his treatment. So let me just say that. I don't like this idea of his illness being part of the WrestleMania build. I think it's fine to acknowledge his speech. Like, I'm picturing what a video package would look like, for example, building up to a Seth Rollins-Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania. It's fair game to play clips from the Roman speech when he came out and he relinquished the championship, because that is part of the storyline. I mean, there were storyline implications for what happened with Roman Reigns. You shouldn't just ignore it. So them acknowledging it and showing footage of Roman's speech and him surrendering the title, I think is fine. I think that's all fair game. And even going as far as to talk about how, you know, Brock Lesnar got the belt back after Roman had worked so hard to defeat him, and now Seth is going to go to WrestleMania and he's going to win the championship for his friend and his brother in Roman Reigns. Something like that is fine. That's totally fine. Anything more than that is exploitation. And frankly, it's just not necessary. Seth Rollins was the hottest act on Monday Night Raw only a few months ago. He's still popular. I'm not saying he's not popular, but there was a different vibe. There was a different feeling in June, July, August when it came to Rollins, where he just felt like this is the guy that should be going to SummerSlam, frankly, to challenge for the championship and not Roman Reigns. But they stuck with their plan. They went with Roman. Of course, in the end, who knew that this would happen? And they kind of screwed themselves. And now the belt is back on Brock Lesnar. And the belt is back basically being defended once every quarter now in this company. Rollins against Lesnar has enough juice and has enough backstory of its own without needing to exploit the fact that Roman Reigns has cancer. Rollins and Lesnar have a history dating all the way back to WrestleMania 31. Brock lost his championship to Seth Rollins. He didn't get pinned by him that night. And in fact, the one singles match that these two had, which came, you know, many, many months later, didn't even have a finish. You know, Seth was defending his championship and Brock pretty much had him beat. He had him dead to rights, hit an F5, but there was no finish. And then, of course, Rollins was involved in that classic triple threat at the Royal Rumble that one year with him and Lesnar. And actually, that was the same year even before the cash-in at WrestleMania. So actually, their history goes back even before WrestleMania 31. So there's a history there. There's unfinished business between these two guys. You don't need to step over that line into exploitation territory, which is what I fear is going to end up happening. It wouldn't be the first time this company has done that before. And it damn sure won't be the last. I just don't think it's necessary. So I read that and I start to worry. I go, oh boy. There's no telling how far they're going to go with this. But I think a simple acknowledgement of the Roman stuff is fine. Just don't get too heavy-handed with it. If that is the match for WrestleMania, I think that's fine. I think Seth Rollins against Brock Lesnar would make for a fine championship match at WrestleMania. Not the main event. The main event is already reserved for two other people. You can't have that table. You can't have our nicest table, but we'll give you that other nice table in the back of the restaurant. That belongs to Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins. Now, if it is Rollins challenging for the championship, question is, where does that leave Drew McIntyre? Drew McIntyre is on the ascent. Drew McIntyre was put over strong by Kurt Angle a few weeks ago, and they are clearly building Drew for bigger and better things. And I made the comment many months ago that if this guy isn't champion or a champion by the time WrestleMania 35 rolls around, then these people are doing something wrong. And now we're not too far off from WrestleMania. He was the Raw Tag Team Champion for a while. I don't know that this guy is going to end up with championship gold by or before WrestleMania. But I know right now Seth Rollins is the Intercontinental Champion. Maybe Drew McIntyre wins the IC title off of Rollins. That way, if Seth goes on, let's say, to win the Royal Rumble, he beats Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania to win the championship. And by the way, there is no guarantee that he will beat Brock Lesnar. We cannot just assume that because it's the build-up to the biggest show of the year that we're automatically going to have a new champion. Brock Lesnar has had a very good WrestleMania. Actually, the last time Brock Lesnar lost at WrestleMania was 31, was the match where Seth cashed in. And you could even say that. Now, he wasn't pinned. So you want to go back even further than that. The last time Brock Lesnar was flat-out pinned and beaten at WrestleMania, you'd have to go all the way back to you-know-who, Triple H, of course, at WrestleMania 29. So Brock Lesnar, generally speaking, does pretty well for himself at WrestleMania. And it's one of those things, I just talked about it before. Vince McMahon loves to deliver surprises to the crowd. Let's have him beat Roman Reigns this year. They won't expect that. So it is not at all a guarantee that if that is the match, that Seth's walking out with that championship. But let's say he does. after Drew had already beaten him months before to win the IC title. Well, now, coming out of WrestleMania, McIntyre can stake his claim to being the number one contender because he's already beaten Rollins. Or whatever they want to call him, since apparently the words number one contender are now on the list of banned terms in WWE. We already know the words common sense are on that list also. So I'm curious what happens with Drew, because he is, again, he's on the ascent. There's no obvious match for him at WrestleMania right now, unless they do something with him and Dolph, and to me that hardly seems like a WrestleMania-worthy match for him. Maybe him and Braun. You know, when Braun inevitably fails again, what's Braun Strowman going to do at WrestleMania? Maybe they do a singles match with him and Drew. Look, the original lineup for the TLC pay-per-view on the SAP Center website had Braun Strowman against Drew McIntyre listed on the card. And then a week later, it changed to Braun Strowman against Baron Corbin. Perhaps they had second thoughts and said, you know what, let's hold off on McIntyre and Strowman, and instead we'll do that match at WrestleMania. That's a possibility. But despite the tasteless mention of Roman that they had with Ambrose on Monday, I did want to mention this. There was something cool that happened. The Staples Center, where they were for the show last week, presented Triple H and Stephanie backstage with a check for $10,000 in Roman Reigns' name to be donated to the charity of his choice. And that charity was Children's Health Dallas. So I thought that was a cool story. That's a positive way to play off a horrible situation with Roman Reigns. I don't need to see this guy and his illness exploited on TV for some shitty storyline that doesn't need it. But stories like this, I'd like to hear more of. SmackDown Live. I can't say SmackDown was as bad as Raw, because it wasn't. Raw set the bar real low this week, but it wasn't very good either. Like Raw, there were no good matches. Absolutely no follow-up on SmackDown getting swept by Raw at Survivor Series two nights earlier. If you thought Shane McMahon or Paige would come out and be upset about this, you would be wrong. They didn't seem to care, so why should we? Charlotte Flair is now channeling her inner Becky Lynch and is getting cheered for it with Becky out. They are, I'm sure, no doubt, hoping that the fans will take to Charlotte the way that they did to Becky. The same Becky who clearly disrupted whatever their plans may have been for Charlotte and Ronda at WrestleMania. I think the Becky Lynch thing, her getting over as strong as she has, was the same happy accident that we saw with Daniel Bryan back in 2012 when they had Sheamus pin him in 18 seconds at WrestleMania. They could not have possibly foreseen the reaction that he got after that from the crowd. There's no way that this company expected that to happen. And they had to be dragged, kicking and screaming, into putting him in the WrestleMania main event. If the fans, let's say, don't take to Becky the way they did after SummerSlam this year, she's pulling Battle Royal duty at WrestleMania next year. All the time they spent post-SummerSlam trying to get people to boo her, it didn't work. And you know their grand plan for Charlotte and Ronda at WrestleMania was disrupted because of it. But Charlotte was a victim here too, because she was completely miscast as a babyface coming out of that SummerSlam show. Now, though, based on her actions, you know, you would think that she kind of looks to be a heel, except the fans are finally cheering for her, because she was booked like a total badass at Survivor Series, and again here on this show, so of course they cheered for her. Maybe the fans are the real heels. Paige comes out, she says, I'm fining you $100,000, which seems excessive, by the way. I'm fining you $100,000 for your actions in assaulting referees and everything that happened at Survivor Series. Charlotte didn't seem to care. This brought out the Iconics. They mocked Charlotte. Charlotte wrestled Billy Kay in a short match. Billy Kay is terrible. Billy Kay is horrible. Hopefully the Peyton Brigade doesn't come after me for saying that, but she is. She's terrible. And Peyton Royce is going nowhere so long as the two of them are stuck together. So this was bad but short. Charlotte finished her off with natural selection. She then challenged Peyton Royce to a match, which ended when Billy got involved for the DQ. And as they attacked Charlotte, they were beating her down when this was over, there were loud chants of Becky Charlotte made a comeback on the two of them and threw them both over the announce desk and stood tall. On the one hand, I like the new Charlotte because it's been long overdue. Charlotte needed a refresh, and they gave her one, although I hesitate to say that it was a heel turn because all she did was beat up a Raw star. I mean, yeah, she obviously went overboard with it. She snapped, but it was Raw versus SmackDown. The competitive spirit overcame her. On SmackDown, she beat up the Iconics, who were heels. Everybody hates them. At the Starrcade event last night, she had a babyface match. She beat Asuka, and the two of them embraced when the match was over. It's not like she beat up Asuka. So I don't know that she's a heel necessarily. On the other hand, though, they are turning her into a bootleg Becky Lynch. And it's not going to work. Long term, it's not going to work. Case in point, the fans were chanting Becky's name and not Charlotte's name as she was being beaten down. If Becky was out there being beaten down, do you really think they would be chanting for Charlotte? Of course not. Now, this does at least make Charlotte more interesting as opposed to just staying the course with her in that tired babyface role. They should be setting up a rousy Charlotte rematch for the Royal Rumble and Becky against Ronda for WrestleMania. Nothing changes. I said before, stay the course. That is the money match. I saw there was a back and forth on Twitter this week with Becky and her fellow Irishman, Conor McGregor. I mean, if he gets involved in this somehow for WrestleMania, that would make the match even bigger. I'm not sure I want him involved. I would hate for him to overshadow the women. I'm not exactly a big Conor fan to begin with, but, you know, it might just be best for him to keep his support limited to some tweets. But it just goes to show you, this is the big match. Conor McGregor's not out there tweeting about Charlotte. He's tweeting about Becky. A lot of people are. Shane McMahon was a guest on Miz TV, and Shane came out, and he was absolutely disgusted and angered by what happened at Survivor Series. He was threatening to fire people. He couldn't believe that they were swept. Oh, wait, what's that? What's that? Oh, wait, no, I'm being told that he did not do that, and in fact, he didn't seem bothered by any of that at all. Okay, good to know. Thank you for that clarification. Miz was sucking up to him for his performance in the men's Survivor Series match, said he wanted to be partners with Shane, and so they brought out a jobber tag team called the Bryant Brothers. And Shane just was, he was in street clothes, and he was standing out there on the apron, let Miz do all the work, and Miz went to go tag him. He got rolled up by one of the brothers and pinned. I assume this is leading to Shane against The Miz at some point. I don't know, maybe at TLC, possibly. I'm not sure what for. Nor can I really bring myself to care. Because if they can't be bothered to care, then why should I? Why would these two even be in a program together? If we assume that's where this is headed. Well, I guess we'll find out. Or, knowing them, maybe we won't. New Day beat Big Show in the bar, the Big Bar, in a Thanksgiving feast fight. New Day were dressed as pilgrims. Big E hit Sheamus with a turkey for the win. And that's really all I have to say about that. Daniel Bryan. This was one of the few really good parts of SmackDown on Tuesday. Daniel Bryan came out to cut a promo, and he said that he had committed an act of betrayal, but not when he beat AJ Styles and assaulted him a few weeks ago. The week before it would have been. He says it was 3 years ago. He was forced to give up on his dreams. He said the difference between himself and the people is that, unlike them, he doesn't give up. He said that when he came back, he got some of the loudest yes chants that he has ever gotten. For the people, it was a special moment. They were not there for the pain. They were not there for the fights, the internal squabbles with the family. He had to listen to a therapist tell him, you gotta give this up, you gotta move on. He said the only ones that moved on were the fans. He pointed out that the yes chants slowly disappeared and he stopped fighting. He said his dreams took over. His dreams kicked AJ Styles in the balls. His dreams told him that he didn't need to beat Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. It told him, let Lesnar beat the weakness out of him and there would be a new emergence when the match was over, which would explain why he had that dumb look on his face, that dumb smile when the match was over with Brock at the end of the pay-per-view. He said the old Daniel Bryan that people loved was dead, and the Yes Movement is dead. What is left is the new Daniel Bryan. I was hoping he would say Bryan Danielson, but getting a little ahead of myself there. I guess I would have to watch Total Divas to see him go by that name. But he said, what's left is the new Daniel Bryan. And he said, never give up on your dreams. So the man has basically come unglued. I like it. I like the new heel, Daniel Bryan. It was time to change things up. He's not wrong. The Yes chants were growing quieter and quieter. I mean, go back and watch that SmackDown the week before when he challenged AJ Styles for the championship. And he came out. It was pretty weak, I thought, the reaction that he got. So he's not wrong in what they had him say here during this promo. And honestly, you know, this to me is the best kind of heel turn. It's one where the heel honestly believes in what he is saying. He could justify his behavior by pointing out the fact that the fans no longer believed in him. That the Yes chants grew quieter and quieter, which is true. This reminds me of Chris Jericho back in 2008 during the feud with Shawn Michaels. Jericho justified his actions by pointing out what hypocrites the fans were in their adoration for Shawn Michaels. Here's a guy who was blatantly lying to them about having a knee injury. And this, like, Jericho just couldn't wrap his head around this, how he got away with it and people cheered for him anyway. How could you do this? You people are hypocrites. All he was doing was pointing out the truth, and he got booed for it. In his mind, he wasn't the bad guy. He wasn't the heel. The fans were. Shawn Michaels was. This kind of reminds me of that. And he survived Brock Lesnar without getting his brains totally scrambled, so that's a plus. You know, he won, even in defeat last Sunday. Just surviving that match, I think, was, unscathed, was a win for Daniel Bryan. So I like this. Randy Orton against Rey Mysterio, they had that as the main event. Orton spent a good part of the match trying to rip Rey's mask off his head, which he succeeded in doing, by the way. I'm sure this match will be heavily edited when it ends up on the network in about a month. Rey's face was very clearly exposed during the match. He had a 619, and Orton rolled out to the floor before Rey could finish him off. So then Rey says, all right, I'm going to go and do this sliding splash, you know, where he hits the ropes, he slides out under the bottom rope and lands on top of his opponent with a splash. So he goes for the sliding splash, but Orton catches him with an RKO on the floor as he slides out of the ring. These RKO spots will never get old. He throws Rey back inside, hits another RKO, and gets the pin. Then after the match, he wrapped a chair around Rey's head. He sent him into the ring post, and then he ripped his mask clean off his head, and he held it up like a trophy. A true heel. I do enjoy this version of Randy Orton. Not enough to want to see him as champion again, but just the total malice that he shows, everything about him, except for the RKO. The RKO is the one thing that people are going to pop for no matter what. But aside from that, nothing redeeming about this guy. Nothing exciting about this guy. He is a classic heel. He is a sick, sadistic heel. The stuff with Jeff Hardy and ripping the stuff out of his ear and all the things he's done. The clever ways that he comes up with these RKO spots. Whoever came up with that sliding RKO spot deserves a lot of praise. I thought that was very well done. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed what they did here at the end of SmackDown. So the Bryan promo and the end of the main event were really the best parts of what I thought was an otherwise very dull, uninspired show. It didn't make me angry like Raw did, though. I will say that. SmackDown was just sort of there. It did not, you know, cause me to have steam coming out of my ears like certain parts of Raw did. Savage tweet of the week goes to the man, Becky Lynch. I'm debating just renaming the award in her honor, but my fear is that if I do that, Rebby Hardy will hunt me down and will torture me. Just imagine the promos between those two. But Becky Lynch does win this week, and it wasn't just a matter of Becky Lynch, you know, burning someone else. She's been burning so many people on Twitter recently, and it's been fun to watch. She just has this whole social media thing down to a T. But there was a very embarrassing response from Chris Jericho to something that she posted. So, you know, it all started innocently enough. Chris Jericho made a tweet. He said, congrats WWE for making women's wrestling the hottest thing in the company. And he said, who's headlining WrestleMania? And he tagged Becky Lynch. He tagged Ronda Rousey. And he tagged Nia Jax. I don't know why he would do that. And Charlotte Flair. Well, Becky Lynch responded. And she said quite simply, nope. That was me. She is responsible for being the hottest thing in the women's division of the company, and she wouldn't be wrong. So then Jericho responded. He says, yes, for sure, with an assist to Nia Jax for breaking your face, of course. And Becky responded. She said, you know, the sucker punch drew blood for sure. Little known fact, though, I actually got the concussion from trying to listen to your last, quote, album. And Jericho just couldn't help himself. He had to respond to this, and he said, oh, the one that went number one on iTunes with 30 million views on YouTube? Maybe go back to clown school for better material. So Becky is clearly working her gimmick on Twitter, and it's all in good fun, right? It's fun to watch, it's fun to follow along. And it's hard to say sometimes with these things, sarcasm can kind of go over people's heads on the internet. Maybe Jericho can say, oh, I was just being sarcastic, I was just playing along. Didn't seem like he was playing along. It sounded like he was legitimately bothered by what Becky said in her tweet. Like, I saw this and I said, really, dude? Like, this was just embarrassing. He has to tweet her back and cite his views and, like, come on, man. Really? Are you that insecure? I don't know. That's how I read it. I just thought it was a very sad response from Jericho. He was gotten to by the man. Becky needs to keep doing her thing. It's very entertaining.
Let me remind you, and I think a lot of people here will agree, NXT is way better than the WWE.
Lars Sullivan is on his way up to the main roster. The first debut vignette for him aired during the Survivor Series. They aired the same vignette for him on Raw Monday night. Again on SmackDown on Tuesday, saying only that he is coming soon, giving no indication to which brand he is going to be going to. He should be going to SmackDown, and not Monday Night Raw. Raw is already the land of the giants. They've got Brock Lesnar, they've got Braun Strowman, they've got Drew McIntyre, they've got Bobby Lashley. To a much lesser degree, they've got Baron Corbin. All big guys. Matthew on Twitter actually sent an interesting suggestion to me. He said, how about debuting him, as I mentioned a few days ago, I said I thought he should go to SmackDown. He said, well, how about he goes to SmackDown and debuts as a heavy for Daniel Bryan? And I don't think that's such a bad idea. You could even debut him if you wanted to at TLC. AJ Styles maybe has the match won, and all of a sudden Lars Sullivan appears. A wild Lars Sullivan appears and helps, cost AJ the match. That could be one way to introduce him. Now, I, again, think that SmackDown would be the best place for him. He's big, and so he's going to get, I'm sure, plenty of opportunities to get over as a monster. If Strowman is the resident monster on Mondays, I don't see any reason why Lars can't be that on Tuesdays. And he can work. I said, he should go to SmackDown, whether he's a heavy for Daniel Bryan or not. But if he's going to work, programs with different people, I could see him working with Rey Mysterio. I could see him working with Jeff Hardy. Work with guys that will bump for him and will make him look good. And don't stand him next to people who are going to look bigger and taller than he is. I just think there's far more people like that on Raw. And I don't know why you would do that. But the dynamic of watching him, for example, standing next to a Rey Mysterio will just make him look even bigger than he really is. Now, I debated even bringing this up, because there was other Lars Sullivan news this weekend that wasn't so good. And it became sort of a news story this week, and so I just want to address it because I know people are going to ask about it. There was a writer on the website Ringside News, apparently had nothing better to do this weekend, and decided to go dig up some old message board posts from Lars Sullivan. His real name is Dylan Miley, dating back as many as 11 years ago, when he was only 19 years old. And I talked about this actually last year on the podcast. Not these particular, you know, controversial posts. But I had mentioned the fact that, you know, Lars used to be a poster on an internet message board on the website bodybuilding.com. He was a frequent poster in those forums. You could still find old posts that are online from I think he had two different accounts. He might have been banned and then came back under a different name. But when he debuted in NXT and was first signed to WWE a few years ago, you can find the old posts from people in those forums saying, hey, is this Dylan? Is this guy, you know, is this one of our own? And they said, yeah, you know, we feel happy for him that he made it. And so he used to be a frequent poster on those forums. I thought that was pretty well known. And these posts are from many years ago, from before he first signed with WWE. And in any event, he is now on the verge of making his main roster debut in the next few weeks. And this person, this reporter, writer, whatever, decided to poke around for some of his old posts, which is certainly fair game to do. You know, I just questioned the timing of this with him about to make his debut, what the intent is here. But it appears that Sullivan posted many controversial things on those forums, including several racist and homophobic posts, which I'm not going to repeat here. He also allegedly referred to Jeff Hardy. This is 11 years ago now. He referred to Jeff Hardy as a drugged-up junkie and a spot monkey with no wrestling ability. He made a comment underneath a video that somebody posted of Stephanie McMahon, calling her very sexy and thanking the poster for the fap vid. The racial stuff, I mean, the wrestling stuff just sounds like any friggin' 20-something pro wrestling troll on an internet message board. The racial stuff is disgusting. Again, I'm not going to repeat it, but it was pretty bad, and I don't condone any of that. It's embarrassing. There's no place for it. And if he really did post that, I can only hope that this dude has smartened himself up since he was 19 and 20 years old, or that he was just really bad at trolling and was trying to get a rise out of people. There was one person I remember seeing who said something to the effect of, this might have been after he was signed, and they said, oh, wow, you know, one of our own just got signed by WWE. I remember El Prospecto, that was like his username. And he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. He had made enemies on those forums. And there was somebody who posted something and said, yeah, he's kind of misunderstood. You know, he reached out to me one day via DM and basically said I was the only one who, quote, got it. And he was basically just trying to stir shit and get people all riled up and didn't actually believe what he was saying. And who knows if that's the case or not. But that's something that somebody said. This is years ago. This is before all this stuff even came out. So were those even his genuine views? I don't know. I don't know him. I don't know enough about him to know for sure if he was just being a stupid troll, an immature, you know, person posting dumb shit, or if he honestly believed that, or if he honestly still believes that and still talks like that, which I think is disgusting if he does. I just don't know. But, you know, it was only a few months ago that people were digging up old tweets from Cedric Alexander and Ty Dillinger from 6 or 7 years ago, making rape jokes. And these guys 6 or 7 years ago were hardly, you know, teens. Both men issued apologies for it when that story broke. Cedric was 22 years old when he made that joke. And as he said in his apology at the time over the summer, you know, since then I've become a husband, I've become a father, and I've grown, and he was basically ashamed by what he had said. He didn't lose his job over it. Ty Dillinger didn't lose his job over it. Nor should they have. I'm not calling for anyone's head here either. You look at Hulk Hogan and what happened to him. Hogan was well into his 50s when he got caught saying what he said. And once that story exploded, yeah, there were private comments, and that's not fair to Hulk. Well, you know what? It did leak, and the guy was toxic, and WWE had no choice at the time but to cut ties with him. So that's why that situation is a little bit different and went down the way that it did. Now, Sullivan may have to answer for what he said when he gets to the locker room. That's possible. You know, if he does end up on that SmackDown Live roster, for example, working with someone like Jeff Hardy, I could see Jeff maybe having some words with him about it. But that's something for him to square away with his colleagues. He's going to have to answer for that, possibly answer for that with his colleagues. The Stephanie thing is just embarrassing when you consider that his boss in NXT is Stephanie's husband. But it serves as a good reminder not to post stupid shit like that on the internet. That stuff doesn't go away. It follows you. That being said, I really don't see this having any effect on his debut. Not at all. They taped some matches from the Staples Center before TakeOver, which aired on this week's episode of NXT. Sullivan was in action. He beat a jobber with the freak accident. He then demanded an NXT championship match. Said he was going to make an example out of this guy some more when all of a sudden Keith Lee came out to make the save. He hit Sullivan with the pounce, sent him flying halfway across the ring. That sets up a match between the two of them this Wednesday. That should be fun. Big man versus big man. Keith Lee's first real challenge here in NXT. Candice LeRae and Nikki Cross was the only real match on the show this week. Candice is showing more heel tendencies since her husband went heel, which, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't seem right to me. If she's going to turn, I feel like there should be a reason for it. Or maybe I'm just reading too much into it and she's not actually going heel, but it just felt, it kind of felt that way to me watching her here. She got frustrated that she couldn't put Nikki away. Then she put her in the Gargano Escape. Nikki made the ropes. Nikki then hit the twisting neck breaker for the win. Match was okay. You know, finish was very sudden. I think these two could probably do a lot better. I want to give a shout out to the new WWE Performance Center YouTube channel. I don't know how many of you are aware of the fact that they have set this channel up. I think you should all give it a follow. They've got some really cool content up there. A lot of out of character, behind the scenes, short videos. They have stuff from backstage at TakeOver, for example, videos from the Performance Center, just people vlogging, holding their phone up, and like Nikki Cross. If you want to see and hear Nikki Cross out of character, talking like a normal human being, they've got some vlogs up there from her. It reminds me of that old Breaking Ground show they had for a while on the network. I like that kind of stuff. And there's also some great documentary type stuff on Matt Riddle. There's actually two parts up so far. It's called Arrival, Matt Riddle. First video, again, we're talking 6, 7, 8 minute videos here. And it shows him at home. You know, he and his family are packing their stuff up. They live in, what is it, like Virginia or something. You know, kind of in the suburbs. And they're getting ready to make the move down to Orlando. They're relocating to Florida now that Riddle is with NXT. And it shows his wife and it shows his daughters and his home as he's packing stuff up. And just talking about how tough it's been, the struggle they went through, where he would be on the road, and then his wife would be, you know, and his wife would have the kids, and then he would come home with the kids, and his wife would go out and would work long hours, and it was a financial struggle for them until he finally signed with WWE. And anyway, it's called Matt Riddle Arrival. Episode 2 just went up. Definitely worth checking out, especially if you don't know too much about him. You'll learn a lot more watching this. I hope they do more of this sort of thing. Triple H announced that they will be returning to Blackpool, England at the Empress Ballroom on Sunday, January 13th to tape more television for NXT UK. But first, the night before, Saturday, January 12th, they will be there for the first ever NXT UK TakeOver special that will be streaming live on the network. This has been rumored for a while that the UK brand would be getting its own TakeOver shows next year, and this confirms it. So if you live in the UK and you want tickets for either night, you can get them starting Monday at 10 a.m. local time. You can go to bookingsdirect.com, and you can get your tickets there. This next story made me angry. I'm sure you've all by now heard about this little incident that took place in Mexico where a wrestler, and I hesitate to even use that term for this guy. I think it's an insult to actual professional wrestlers. But during a match, this guy hurled a 20-pound cinder block at his opponent's head and nearly killed him. This happened during a Lucha Libre boom show. There was a boom, all right. Angel o Demonio, angel or demon. This guy's 54 years old. He threw a cinder block at Cuervo. Now, Cuervo is a wrestler. Typically, he works in Puerto Rico. There is a Mexican wrestler by the same name. That is not who this was. I watched the full match. Somebody uploaded the entire match from start to finish on YouTube. And I watched it. These two were having a hardcore casket match. It was literally a casket just sitting in the middle of the ring. I don't know if the idea was that you stuff your opponent. I guess it's the traditional stuff your opponent, into the casket rules. But they're having this match and there's barbed wire and chairs and other weapons. And Cuervo hits this guy with some stiff looking chair shots. Nothing completely abhorrent or anything like that. But, you got some stiff looking shots that he lays in there. But Demon returned them. Demon hit him with some hard chair shots as well. It's not as though he didn't throw some, rough chair shots of his own during this match. They were giving it to each other. So they brawl. They have an entrance ramp. They brawl down the platform, the entrance ramp a little bit out of the ring. And then Demon disappears to the back for a few seconds. And when he returns with not one, but two giant cinder blocks. And Cuervo hits him with two more hard chair shots. And then he walks around to the other side of the ring on the outside to go look underneath and find some more toys to play with. That's when Demon grabs one of the cinder blocks, which was said to weigh anywhere from 15 to 20 pounds, and he hurls it out of the ring. He's got both hands on this thing. He sees Cuervo outside. He walks over to the ropes, raises this thing over his head, and just chucks it right at Cuervo. It hits him right in the back of the head. Absolutely sickening to watch. Cuervo is knocked out instantly. He is out cold. You see blood on the floor. Eventually, he's helped back up to his feet. He stumbles around. He's on spaghetti legs. Until finally, because he's clearly not all there. And finally, they help him to the back. Demon, who appears to be grossly overweight, stuffs himself into the casket, I guess so that the match could have a finish. Got to get that finish in. He stuffs himself in there, like trying to shovel 10 pounds of shit into a 5-pound bag. But this video is truly, it is one of the most disgusting things that I have ever seen in wrestling. And I watch Raw every week, so that's saying a lot. But Sin Bodhi was there. He commented on what happened. He said backstage, Cuervo's eyes rolled back into his head. He was vomiting everywhere. He said, Demon was upset that Cuervo hit him hard with chair shots, as if that's an excuse for what he did. That's like saying, you cut me off in traffic, so I'm going to shoot you in the face. The punishment doesn't exactly fit the crime. He claims he wasn't aiming for his head. He was aiming for his back, but he didn't have the accuracy, he said. Yeah, no shit. He said, I apologize to the entire public because, first of all, I am a professional. No, you're not. You're a piece of shit. This wasn't a brick. I see people calling it a brick, the brick attack. It was a fucking cinder block. Why don't you call it what it is? And to make matters worse, the guy had his back turned. He didn't even see it come. He couldn't even get out of the way. But this guy is lucky to be alive right now. Here in New York, we get stories from time to time of bricks. Like actual bricks, single bricks, that will fall off the sides of buildings, like when there's a really bad windstorm. And we have construction going on all year long in this friggin' city. You can't go two blocks without finding a block that's going to have the scaffolding, because, to protect people in case debris falls. So there's always construction going on and stuff, and when you get a bad windstorm, a brick could come loose, and it falls, and we hear stories all the time of people getting hit in the head and killed. By one brick. This guy had a cinder block thrown at his head at full force. It didn't fall off the top of a building, although that probably would have killed him. He had a cinder block hurled at his skull, and he is lucky to be alive right now. Kurt Angle saw this. He saw the video of what happened, and he said, hey, give me 10 seconds with that stupid MF-er that threw the brick. Shouldn't be anywhere near the business. That's from Kurt Angle. According to the promoter, Cuervo suffered an epidural hematoma and a skull fracture. He successfully underwent surgery to remove a blood clot from his brain. He is not going to be wrestling for a very long time, if ever again. Not after this. It's like I said, the man is lucky to be alive. He did open his eyes briefly after surgery, but as of a couple of days ago, he was still unconscious in the hospital. Maybe by now he's up and at him, but again, as of, 48 hours ago, he was still not even conscious. They probably had him sedated in the hospital. And for now, the Boxing and Wrestling Commission of Mexico has suspended the other guy. What he did here is not wrestling. It is assault with a deadly weapon. It is attempted murder. And he should be locked away in a cage where he belongs. He should never be allowed to wrestle again, at the very least. After pulling a stunt like this, attempted murder, you're going to let this guy wrestle again? Then again, I think of the whole Invader Bruiser Brody thing down in Puerto Rico and, some of these shady places they've got. Who's to say what the hell's going to happen? He'll probably be back in the ring wrestling in 2 weeks. This week's sad tweet goes to a meteorologist at the Weather Channel. Yeah, we have a non-wrestling sad tweet this week, and it comes from a guy named Mike Seidel. Not to be confused with Matt Seidel. He has been a veteran with the Weather Channel, according to his Twitter bio, for over 27 years. So he's been around for a while, this guy. He's a veteran. He was the weatherman just 2 months ago. I'm sure some of you saw that story when it went viral. Who got caught on television swaying in the wind outside during a live shot during Hurricane Florence. He was bracing for his life, standing there with a microphone in his hand. Meanwhile, in the background, these two guys just go strolling by like nothing's going on. It's like they live in two completely different places. And he was roundly mocked for it. Well, he has struck again. This time, he posted a tweet with a photo of a snowman and a caption saying, "First snow person of the season and the second snowfall in less than a week in Nashua, New Hampshire. Thanksgiving forecast to be the coldest on record in nearby Boston with a high of 21 and wind chills in the single numbers." Well, I don't give a shit about all that, but he called it a snow person. And it didn't take very long for people to notice and light him up like a Christmas tree. So, a snowman is now a snow person. Frosty the snow person. And it got me thinking. What other words, with the word man in it, are next on the list to be abolished? Weatherman, obviously, becomes weather person. Gingerbread men are no more. They're now to be called gingerbread people. Manpower becomes people power. Oh, God.
People power!
Looks like Big Johnny was ahead of his time. Mankind becomes people kind. Manslaughter becomes people slaughter, which is what I feel like doing after I see some dingbat using the word snow person. Please, don't be like this guy. There are times to be politically correct, and then there are times like this where I just weep for what we've become. Somebody tweeted me recently and they said, Hulu just added all 11 seasons of Married with Children. Oh, hey, there's another fact about the number 11. I could have used that in my intro a few weeks ago. But anyway, so he mentions that Hulu added all 11 seasons of the TV show Married with Children, which I used to watch when I was a kid and is one of the funniest shows of all time. And he mentioned this and he suggested that that show should get the reboot treatment like so many other shows have gotten recently. Like Will and Grace came back and Roseanne came back for a cup of coffee and Murphy Brown came back. Can you imagine a show like Married with Children being back today on network television? What the reaction to that would be? It would be thrown off the air after one episode. I'd be shocked if they even got through one episode. That show wouldn't last 10 seconds. All right, let's get to some of your mailbag questions, and then still to come, we're going to start our Royal Rumble countdown, greatest championship matches in history, starting with the number 10 match on the countdown. That's coming up. But keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Eamon from Zurich, Switzerland wrote in and shared this. It was too good not to mention. He says, been watching your show for a long time now. Recently, my model UN here in Switzerland hosted a conference with many people arriving from all over. At one of the drinking nights, I was wearing a SmackDown shirt and somebody recognized it and we started talking about wrestling. Then we got to talking about podcasts and wouldn't you know it, he listens to you too. This is the first time I've ever met somebody else who listens to your podcast. That is awesome. So thank you for sharing that. I wanted to thank Eamon for sending that in. I always love hearing stuff like that, especially like from all over the world, different parts of the world, and how we all have something in common. So that's cool. Colin from Kelowna, is it Kelowna? Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada. I had a thought, and it led to a couple of ideas for next year's Survivor Series. A couple of months before Survivor Series next year, Chris Jericho returns to tell the world that Survivor Series is going to be a bit different this year. Raw and SmackDown are going to have to get along if they want to survive an invading force. And with Jericho's recent work with New Japan Pro Wrestling, it would lead to speculation about New Japan and a possible invasion angle. Let this idea simmer for a while, and then a month before the event, have it promoted that Jericho has a special announcement on TV. Then run a show-long angle with the people or people being taken out backstage. At the end of the show, you do an NXT invasion attack out of nowhere and have them destroy everything, similar to how the Nexus debuted. Then you build to a traditional Survivor Series elimination match with the idea that after that, main roster versus NXT, which NXT would win. Anyway, what do you think of the idea of NXT against the main roster at Survivor Series? I think it's a clever idea. Anything to change up the Raw versus SmackDown dynamic is fine with me. It's proven to be a complete failure. It means absolutely nothing. It doesn't have to mean nothing, but they make it mean nothing. So, yeah, I'm all in favor of trying something different, but I wouldn't do it. And the reason I wouldn't do it should be very obvious. Do you, for 1 second, honestly believe in your heart of hearts that Vince McMahon would allow the NXT guys, would allow his son-in-law's gang over there, to win one over the main roster talent? Like, even if you go all the way back to the invasion in 2001, when WCW and ECW guys beat Team WWF at that invasion pay-per-view, first of all, the ECW guys were already in WWF, and it took a WWF guy in Stone Cold Steve Austin to win the match for them, and then he became their de facto leader. The Nexus started out hot, and then died a death because they couldn't bring themselves to have the NXT guys, the young guys, beat the WWE guys. They just couldn't do it. And they made sure that John Cena put them down at the end with an exclamation point to make that very clear. You know, Kevin Owens beating John Cena in their very first match together while Owens was still the NXT champion, it's one of those rare examples of them doing the right thing in that instance. But you could count on one hand, after a fireworks accident where you don't even have all your fingers left, you can count on one hand the number of times in recent years that they've done the right thing with that kind of stuff. Raw just swept SmackDown Live at Survivor Series for no reason, other than Vince McMahon wanted Raw to wave its dick around to show what the true number one A-show is. Do you honestly think that Team NXT would beat a WWE team at Survivor Series? And so they lose. You could still do the match. They could be competitive, but they lose. And what does that do for NXT? All it does is paint a picture of them as the inferior brand. I would argue they are the A brand right now. That NXT is the A show in WWE. So no, I would use the Nexus angle as a cautionary tale. I would not use it as a blueprint for what to do. It's a blueprint for what not to do. And I would keep the NXT talent as far away from the main roster talent as possible. Because you can be sure of one thing. If there is a fun idea that you have as a fan, WWE will find a way to fuck it all up. That you can be sure of. Jay from the UK. I have a shaky feeling that WWE is going to stick to the safe formula of having part-timers in the WrestleMania main event, even though this would be a great opportunity to place a new star in the spot since Roman Reigns is no longer active. I still feel WWE will continue to have no faith in its roster and advertise a Brock Lesnar versus Rock match for the Universal Championship, with the story being that Rock still has not received his rematch for the WWE title from WrestleMania 29. What do you think? Well, first of all, the WWE title and the Universal title are two completely different championships, so I'm not really sure what one has to do with the other. That's number one. And number two, no, I don't think it's happening. Rock is very busy. He doesn't have time. There's insurance issues with him coming back and wrestling. It's been years since he's wrestled a match. And no, I don't see it happening. Dalvin from Brooklyn, you cannot include the two Shawn Michaels matches for this. What are your other five favorite WrestleMania Undertaker matches? So basically, he wants to know what I think are the five best Undertaker WrestleMania matches of all time outside of the two that he had with Shawn Michaels, which obviously, if I did a list, WrestleMania 25 would be number one, and there's a pretty good chance WrestleMania 26 would be number two. So if you remove those from the equation, top five. Well, what I scribbled down here, as far as Undertaker's best matches, I thought, at WrestleMania. First one I think of is the match with Triple H at WrestleMania 17. The first match, the one they never acknowledge. It's like it never happened. American Badass Taker against the Game, Triple H. Up to that point, there were certain WrestleMania matches that Undertaker had that were good. And there were some that were absolutely awful. So the one with Snuka, which was his first one, was a very basic match. The one with Jake, I actually kind of liked it. It wasn't a good match, but I liked it. And the tombstone on the floor was good, even though Jake's head was 6 inches up off the floor. That was a total squash. Jake was headed out of the company, and they had, you know, they put the new guy over him. You know, and then I think of the matches with Giant Gonzalez and King Kong Bundy, and they were just terrible. Diesel, the match with Diesel was good. Sid, not so good. The Kane stuff I never really got into. The Boss Man Hell in a Cell was fucking atrocious. And so we get to WrestleMania 17, and I think that was his first truly, truly good, like very good to great WrestleMania match. There was nothing on the line. There were no championships on the line. It was not called a number one contenders match. There was no fancy stipulation. It was just one-on-one on the undercard. And I thought they over-delivered. It was a fun match. There's that great near fall where Undertaker gets Triple H up for the last ride, and Triple H has the sledgehammer, which had been on the ground. And when he was bent over for the powerbomb, he very subtly reached down and picked up the sledgehammer. Undertaker didn't know. And when he got him up for the powerbomb, referee didn't see it. He whacked him right in the head with it. And I thought that was the finish. I think everybody did. And he kicked out. Like there are parts of that match that still stand out to me. The tombstone. That was the first time Undertaker had used the tombstone, I think, since he came back the year before, when he hurt Triple H with it. So, like, certain things like that I remember. Great finish. And also, I think the first time I can remember them acknowledging the streak was WrestleMania that year. Maybe there was a random comment they threw out at WrestleMania 14 or 15 or something, but the first time I really remember Jim Ross pointing out that The Undertaker was unbeaten at WrestleMania was when he beat Triple H at 17. So that would be on the list. The next one, if I'm going in order here, kind of like chronological order, you know, the second one on the list would be Undertaker and Batista. These are not ranked, by the way, but Undertaker and Batista from WrestleMania 23. Those guys were on a mission. They were pissed. They were very upset that they were not going on last. They were not technically considered the main event that year. And so they were motivated to go out there and steal the show. And steal the show they did. I thought they had a great match. It might not have been their best match. They probably had better matches together. But it was for the World Heavyweight Championship. I thought it had, you know, was better than it had any right to be. And Undertaker won the championship, and it was a very good match. So that would be on my list. Number three would be Undertaker and Edge from WrestleMania 24. That was a very good WrestleMania main event. I mean, the thing that really stands out to me was the Charles Robinson sprint down that very long aisleway. You can probably find the Ultimate Warrior videos online of him coming down to the Warriors theme. There's another video of him coming down to, I think, was it Chariots of Fire, which is also pretty funny. So, and that, what was that? That was a near fall, I think. But they had a very good match. There are a lot of people who are very fond of that Undertaker-Edge feud on SmackDown. I don't really look back on it as fondly. I was never really like, wow, what a great feud. But they had some really good matches. And as far as WrestleMania, you know, main events, you know, Undertaker, for all the years he's competed at WrestleMania, he doesn't really have a whole lot of main events to his name. This was one of them, and this is one of the best, I think. So that's three of the five. Fourth match I would put on there would be the Undertaker Triple H match at WrestleMania 27. Not a whole lot to look back on and be happy about when it comes to WrestleMania that year. This was clearly the standout. This was the match of the night. And I would not put it above any of the matches that Undertaker had with Shawn. I think the Shawn matches are a step above. But this is right below. I thought that first match was great. The first match of the series they had, you know, in 2011 and 2012. The WrestleMania 27 match with Undertaker and Triple H I thought was very, very good. And I would round out the list with... I'm not going to put the Hell in a Cell with him and Triple H. That actually is really... It's a great near fall in that match where you really bought for a second into the fact that Undertaker was going to get pinned. As a match, it really is not one of my favorites. If I had to put a fifth match on this list, Undertaker's best at WrestleMania, I'd put the WrestleMania 29 match on there with CM Punk. I thought that was a very good match. And Undertaker, by that point, was pretty beaten up. He had a horrible match with Brock, you know, the next year. A lot of that probably had to do with the concussion he suffered. But the 29 match with Punk, and I know Punk was very upset. You know, Punk had been champion for 434 days, and he lost the championship to The Rock at the Royal Rumble. He lost the rematch the next month. He had that great match on TV on Raw with John Cena, and the winner would go on to challenge Rock for the championship at WrestleMania. And Punk really got a raw deal. I really do feel like Punk should have been in that match, and I'm not a huge fan of doing triple threats in the main event of WrestleMania, but that year, it should have been Cena, Punk, and Rock. If there was any year that CM Punk really did deserve to be in that main event spot at WrestleMania, it was in 2013. And he didn't get it, and I know he was very sour about it, and he knew that he wasn't beating The Undertaker, and he wasn't really into it, but they went out there, and they had a very good match. So that would be my five outside of the Shawn Michaels matches. 17, 23, 24, 27, and 29. The guy's a freak. I'm telling you, this guy has been around forever. And the second half, the matches he had in the second half of his career when he was already quote-unquote washed up, it's just amazing to see the difference in quality of his matches from the first half of his career. When I guess he was probably more gimmick and character-oriented back then, especially the early years. But man, did he have some duds. But you look at the second half of his career, and it's like a completely different person. It's actually quite amazing sometimes to sit back and watch. Beth from Memphis, Tennessee. A few weeks back, I read an article stating that Charlotte's ex-husband filed a lawsuit over accusations made against him in the Ric Flair and Charlotte book that came out last year called Second Nature. In the suit, he claims that Charlotte made false allegations of physical and mental abuse, drug issues, and other things to try to make herself look like a victim. He says he has police reports and dash cam footage to back his claims up. He also named WWE in the suit, claiming that since they printed the book, they are just as guilty. My friend and I were talking and feel this is a case very much like the concussion lawsuits brought against WWE, which, by the way, were subsequently dismissed recently. Do you think this lawsuit has merit, or is this person just looking for a quick payday? I don't claim to know all the details and all the facts of the case. I think, didn't he also accuse her of saying racist things and possibly having footage or something? Well, I haven't seen that footage. I haven't heard that footage. It's all hearsay at this point as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what this guy has. If this guy has police reports and dash cam footage that prove that she's lying, then she's in a lot of trouble, and I think his lawsuit has merit. I don't think it has merit as far as WWE is concerned. There may be some legal eagle who listens to this and says that can correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe WWE does have some culpability here, but It sounds to me, and I know Jerry McDevitt and WWE put a statement out basically saying this is without merit. They said the same thing about the concussion suits. Those were thrown out. I suspect the same thing will probably end up happening here, at least as far as the claim against WWE is concerned. But if he has evidence to prove that Charlotte made stuff up about him and said things about him that just weren't true and defamed him, then yeah, she's in a lot of trouble and he should have his day in court. I don't know the situation. I don't know him well enough to say whether or not it's just the money. Obviously, it's a money grab. He's looking for a lot of money. But do his claims have merit? I don't know. It's going to come down to evidence. He either has the evidence or he doesn't. And if he doesn't have the evidence, this is not going anywhere. Simple as that. Billy, in Des Moines, Iowa, I was listening to Wade Keller's podcast and he and Sam Roberts were discussing different possibilities on the men's side of things for the Royal Rumble. They threw out John Cena possibly showing up to win the Rumble and then challenging Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Or Batista winning the Royal Rumble and challenging Lesnar or even Daniel Bryan as revenge for his loss at WrestleMania 30. Or Kevin Owens, if healthy, coming back as a babyface and winning the Rumble to challenge Daniel Bryan. Out of those possibilities, which, if any, do you like the best? I don't really like any of them, to be honest with you. I guess the Owens one would intrigue me the most out of the ones that you just mentioned. But I don't ever need to see, you know, John Cena winning another Royal Rumble. I don't need to see him wrestling Brock Lesnar ever again. They've had enough matches. We don't need to see it again. Batista winning the Rumble, no thank you. I'm not opposed to Brock Lesnar against Batista as an attraction, but just not for the championship. And some people are going to say, well, you know, you can tie it in storyline-wise, because the last time we saw Batista on the roster, I mean, other than the SmackDown 1000 cameo, he was pissed because he was promised a championship rematch, a singles match that he never got. So here we are all these years later, and wouldn't it make sense for him to come back and want a championship match? Again, that was a different championship, if that even matters. I mean, this is the Universal title, not the WWE title, so that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense anyway. But they could do Batista and Brock Lesnar as an attraction without it being for the championship. I don't really have any interest in seeing that be contested for the title. I don't want to see John Cena win another Rumble. I don't want to see Batista win another Rumble. Been there, done that. Cena Bryan for the championship, that would be good. I'd be okay with that. But then you'd have a Raw guy, you know, would have to win the Rumble, and not John Cena. And so I would think Seth Rollins or AJ Styles would be favorites of mine to win the Royal Rumble match this year. I think both of them would be fine choices. Both of them would be first-time winners. If they were to win, I would rather they go down that road. Peter from Greensboro, North Carolina. Could a storyline of Nia Jax taking out Becky Lynch for Charlotte, with Charlotte having paid Nia to injure Becky, be a compelling story? Yes. Absolutely. I like the idea. And that could set up a match between Charlotte and Becky, maybe for the Elimination Chamber. Or it could be... It could be a storyline way for them to get Charlotte involved at WrestleMania and make it a triple threat match, you know, with her and Becky and Ronda. I personally don't want to see that. I would rather they not do that. But the idea of it almost being like a Rikishi ran over Austin type deal where, you know, later on it's revealed that basically Triple H paid him off to do it. I think that would work well here. You wanted to really complete the heel turn for Charlotte and solidify Becky as the anti-authority babyface here. And really clarify their roles on the show. Because it is kind of odd, you know, that these two had this heated feud for many months. And Becky beat her clean at Evolution. And then all of a sudden, it's like they were not really buddy-buddy again. But there was a mutual respect there. They seemed to be okay with each other. Becky picked her as her replacement for Survivor Series and hugged her like they were, you know, fast friends. And it would make a lot of sense if in the end they were to have some kind of revelation where, you know, Nia confronted Charlotte, you know, showed up on SmackDown one day or something and said, hey, maybe she was promised something. And it just sort of gets blurted out, you know, that I did this for you or you paid me to do this or whatever. And it's this big kind of shocking revelation where we find out that Charlotte was behind it the whole time. that takes the focus away from Nia, who I don't need to see Nia featured in any kind of pay-per-view main event anyway. Get her the hell out of there. And it puts all the heat on Charlotte. People love Becky so much, they would boo the shit out of Charlotte. And all of a sudden, there's a renewed reason for them to have at least one more big match together. I just don't think that has to happen at WrestleMania. But yeah, the idea that Charlotte would be behind it, I like it. I just have to flesh the idea out a little bit more, but I think it could work. Mohammed from Kuwait. I've been watching the build-up between John Cena and The Rock for their WrestleMania 28 match, and I've noticed one thing. When it comes to their promos, Cena always had something good to say, whether it was why he needed to beat The Rock, or why he didn't like The Rock in the first place, and everything he said felt real. The Rock, however, did nothing but talk about Cena's lady parts and what's trending on Twitter, which I feel takes away from the build-up to their match. How did you feel about The Rock's promos and their content when you consider the fact that this was building up to one of the biggest matches of all time? You know, it's a weird thing because The Rock has his shtick and it works for him. I don't hear too many people saying, man, I wish The Rock would change. The Rock is The Rock. He's going to come out. He's going to talk about lady parts. He's going to talk about popcorn farts. And he's going to get away with it because he's The Rock. And it gets a reaction and it works and the way he delivers it. Is it juvenile? Is it stupid? Yes. Yes. It is. And I get a little tired of it sometimes too. You know, but he'll show up so seldomly that when he shows up and he does one of these elaborate promos where he's insulting people and ragging on them, it's very entertaining. But does he get away with things that other people wouldn't get away with? Of course. Because he's The Rock. So he gets away with things. That's just the way it is. There's not a whole lot of depth to those promos. You're absolutely right. He comes out, he's cracking, you know, low-key gay jokes on people and saying all these things about John Cena wearing fruity colors and your fruity pebbles, and it gets over with the kids and it gets over with the crowd and people laugh and they chant Rocky. And so he does what works for him. That's what he's done for so long, but there isn't a whole lot of depth there. So if you're looking for depth and you're looking for really like solid storytelling, you're not going to get that from The Rock. Because that's not his routine. That's not what he's there to do. He's not around long enough, I don't think, for him to, you know, really have too much depth anyway to his promo. I'm not trying to make excuses for him. I'm just looking at it and saying, he does a hit and run. When he shows up, he's in, he's out. He's in just enough to do his thing and it works for him. So why would he stop doing it? But I agree. I wish there was more to it than just that. We did get some of that with John Cena, although John Cena gave it right back to him. You know, they had dueling promos where John Cena went back to his thug life, you know, thugonomics gimmick, and he had the purple pinwheel and told Rock to blow him. You know, they went into the gutter with their promos. But there was a little bit more depth on the John Cena side of things. Abbas from London, buy or sell on the better NXT match, Johnny Gargano against Andrade Cien Almas at TakeOver Philly, or Sasha Banks versus Bayley at TakeOver Brooklyn. Ah, two of my favorite matches. I said before that I thought Cien Almas and Gargano earlier this year had the best NXT match in history, and my opinion hasn't changed. So I'm going to buy on Gargano and Almas, and I'm going to sell on Sasha and Bayley. And I was there for the Sasha Bayley match, so like in person, it was such a great match. It was a fun match. The crowd was super into it, and they told a great story in the build up to the match with Sasha saying all these horrible things and bullying Bayley. And so even the story that they told, it built to this great moment of Bayley finally winning the championship, and she hit that big reverse Rana off the top, which was a great way to end the match. It was great, but Gargano and Almas had what I still think is the single greatest match in the history of that NXT brand. The only thing I would have changed that would have made it just pitch perfect would have been if Gargano would have pulled it off in the end and gotten Almas to tap out in the Gargano escape, and the place would have exploded, and for the first time, Johnny was champion. Big championship celebration, and then you can have Tommaso Ciampa come out and ruin it like he did at the end. That's the one thing we didn't get. We didn't get the payoff. We didn't get the big babyface win. That's literally my only critique, and it's barely a critique. That's my only critique of that match. But I can't sell on that. I got to buy on that and sell on Sasha and Bayley.
It's time to rumble! It's time for the Royal Rumble!
All right, it is time to begin our Royal Rumble countdown. Again, we are starting with match number 10 in what is going to be a ranked countdown from 10 to 1 of the top 10 greatest championship matches in Royal Rumble history. We're going to do one match per week leading up to the 2019 Royal Rumble coming up at the end of January. And so number 10 on the list is the Intercontinental Championship match, Last Man Standing, between Dean Ambrose and Kevin Owens from the 2016 Royal Rumble in Orlando. At TLC the month before this, Ambrose had beaten Owens to win the Intercontinental Championship, and they feuded for weeks, which is what led to this Last Man Standing stipulation here. Owens was coming off a very impressive first year on television, one of the true success stories of moving someone from NXT up to the main roster and not getting lost in the shuffle. His very first night on Raw, as the NXT champion, he challenged John Cena. He answered his open challenge when Cena was doing the U.S. title open challenge gimmick. He didn't have a match, but he laid him out. He put his foot down on the championship belt, put his boot right down on top of it, and made a statement his very first night in. In their very first match together at Elimination Chamber, he pinned John Cena cleanly in the middle of the ring. Now, he did go on to lose two straight matches after that to John Cena, but he went on to win the IC title from Ryback at Night of Champions. Ambrose lost to Roman Reigns in the finals of the WWE Championship Tournament at Survivor Series after Seth Rollins had gone down with the Achilles injury. I think it was the Achilles, or maybe it was ACL, but he had suffered that traumatic injury and had to forfeit the championship. And so after losing to Roman Reigns in the finals, he transitioned into this feud here with Dean Ambrose, or Kevin Owens, rather. And that's what led to this match. Now, this match opened the Rumble pay-per-view that year. It was a very hot opener. Not many pay-per-views opened with a Last Man Standing match. If anything, they close out with them, but this one opened with one. I was there that night in Orlando at the Amway Center, and we all loved this match. People were completely into it. It really helped set the tone for the rest of the night. There was an early cannonball through the padding by the ring announcers area before a whole series of chairs got introduced into the match. Owens had set up two chairs in the ring. He tried to powerbomb Ambrose through them, but he got backdropped onto them instead. Owens then set up two tables outside the ring. He stacked them up one on top of the other in one of the corners. So they're outside the ring, in one of the corners by the ring post. And that would play into the finish later on. Ambrose set up another table outside the ring, this one right in front of the announcers. He laid Owens on top of the table. He climbed up to the top rope and came down with an elbow through the table. Both men get back to their feet. They beat the 10 count. Ambrose sets another table up in the ring. This should have been a tables match. He tried for a superplex, but Owens countered it into a Fisherman Buster suplex off the top rope, down through the table, which looked awesome. Not so much for Dean Ambrose, but that really should have been the finish. Of course, it wasn't. Ambrose did barely get back up to his feet before the 10 count. Pop-up powerbomb by Kevin Owens. Again, Ambrose beats the count at the last possible second. So now Owens decides to set up four chairs inside the ring, all facing each other. And he lays Ambrose across the chairs vertically, just sort of lays him backwards. He climbs up top for what I assume would have been a moonsault. We'll never know, because Ambrose got up, and with Owens, he's on top, his back is turned. He gives Owens a shove. He shoves him forward, and he goes flying off the top rope and takes a header through those two stacked tables down below that were set up earlier in the match. That was great. Owens could not answer the 10 count. Dean Ambrose retains his championship in what was an excellent match. I love that finish too. That finish was great. When you weigh the match itself, when you really look at the match itself, I thought they worked that last man stipulation here very well. It was all action. From the moment the bell rung, they did the whole punches. We've seen Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn do this. The bell rings and they immediately meet in the middle and just start wailing away at each other. That's how this opened. It was action from bell to bell. It was all action from start to finish. Two guys who don't like each other just beating the hell out of each other with chairs and tables. So I thought they played the stipulation well, and the crowd, the energy, just, you know, overall fun factor. It was a fun match. You know, when you weigh all of those things, this belongs in the top 10. Both men did appear in the Royal Rumble match later on that night. Kevin Owens was dumped out by the returning Sami Zayn. This was actually Sami's formal main roster call-up, his formal debut, going from NXT to the main roster. He had answered John Cena's open challenge on Raw many months earlier. And actually, his injury, I think, is what paved the way for Kevin Owens to be called up, because Sami got hurt. This is when Sami was flailing his arms around when he came out to the ring, and he tore his rotator cuff, I think it was. And so this was his big return for Sami to the main roster. And he eliminated Owens, and they ended up being part of the big Money in the Bank ladder match at WrestleMania. That was the one that Zack Ryder won. So he got a WrestleMania moment, Ryder did, but then he just dropped the championship to Miz the next night. I'm not sure why, honestly, looking back on it now, I'm not sure why they didn't just do one-on-one Kevin Owens against Sami Zayn, you know, for the IC title at WrestleMania. I guess they just wanted to do the ladder match and get as many bodies in there as possible, but it probably should have been singles, you know, one-on-one. Meanwhile, Dean Ambrose went all the way to the end of that Royal Rumble match that year. So this guy's having a big night. He opens the show, last man standing. He retains his championship. He goes to the Royal Rumble. He makes it all the way to the bottom two. It comes down to him and Triple H. And he gets eliminated by Triple H. Triple H becomes the new WWE champion. So Ambrose, much like Roddy Piper in 1992, falls short of becoming both WWE champion and Intercontinental champion in the same night. But Ambrose had a ton of momentum coming out of this show. And then he lost the IC title on Raw the following month in a fatal five-way. Didn't even get pinned for it. He lost to Triple H in a WWE Championship match at Roadblock, that Roadblock special on the network. And then he lost again at WrestleMania to Brock Lesnar. And Ambrose told Steve Austin many months later on his podcast that he had all of these ideas for the match and Brock just was not responsive to any of them. And he was greatly frustrated by that going into that match. Of course, 2 months after that match, Brock announced that he was going back to the UFC to fight Mark Hunt. So Brock clearly knew he was going back to the UFC when he wrestled Dean Ambrose, and or at least that there was a very good chance he was going to go back to the UFC. And he probably didn't want to go too crazy with the hardcore stuff for fear of getting hurt. So he vetoed everything that Dean wanted to do. What did he want to use? A chainsaw? Like, I'm curious now what wild ideas Dean Ambrose actually had for that match with Brock Lesnar. So that was number 10. We're going to continue the countdown next week. We'll feature the number 9 match on this countdown next week. I've had a lot of fun actually going back and watching some of these matches, because I've tried to watch virtually every championship match at the Royal Rumble, going all the way back to 88, 89, whenever it was that, you know, they first had a championship. Well, I guess 88, the Jumping Bomb Angels match. So I've watched pretty much everything, because I said, look, it's been years in some cases since I've seen some of these matches. It wouldn't be fair to just go based off memories of matches that maybe I haven't seen in 5, 10, 20 years. So I've been studying, going back, and I had my list. My list has changed over the last few weeks. There were some matches in the top 10 that I removed in favor of others. So it's going to be very interesting to play this out over the next 10 weeks and see how my list matches up with yours, because I'm sure you guys may have a different list than I do. So anyway, that'll be next week. Number 9, keep sending in your questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @solomonster. I'm most active on there. I'm also on Instagram, thesolomonster. It's my name on there. And that's going to wrap it up for this week. Next weekend is episode 575. So we're getting up there. We're not that far off from 600. I feel like we just celebrated 500 last year with that big live show. May have to do another one of those on YouTube. So, yeah, 575 next weekend. That will be the first sound off of December as we get very close to closing out 2018. So soon enough, we're going to be talking about match of the year, comeback of the year, predictions for 2019. 'Tis the season. We're getting close. And hopefully you guys will join me for all of that. So until next time, be well. Stay safe. If you're going to watch Starrcade tonight, don't forget, hour-long special on the network at 8 p.m. I'm sure it'll be, you know, on demand after that. And I will see you back here for a brand new episode next weekend. So until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.